with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this midweek Wednesday edition. It's the first day of October. A new month begins, and we are barely 30 days away from, oh, God, please, please, oh, God, please, anybody, Flying Spaghetti Monster, Mithra, Buddha, Allah, Yahweh, is anybody listening? Please, please, in a little more than a month, can we please get rid of these right-wing, pig-licking, horses' rear ends that are killing our country? Please, can we do that? Okay, now that that's all out of my system, maybe things will get a little bit better for the rest of the evening. There's only 2 hours and 58 minutes to go. We can hope. But it's not just any old day. Oh, heck no, it's not just the middle of the week. It's not just hump day, baby. It's not just downhill to Friday. Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Wednesdays are special on the Head On Radio Network. Wednesdays are sacred on this program because, well, you know what Wednesdays are. Choir master, please. It's prayer meeting.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, glory, hallelujah, brethren and sistren. Come on down the blood red carpet and lay your, get upon your knees, what you standing there for. Get on your knees and put your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing ways of common sense a-flowing through you. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Our communion is reason and rationality. Partake ye of your own free will. Amen and amen. Somebody pass me a rubber snake. It is about 5 minutes past the hour on this Wednesday evening prayer meeting edition of Head On. And, you know, way back when I was just a little Baptist, fighting and finding my way out of the nightmare that is religious fundamentalism, one of the things that changed me most was an invitation that I got because I participated in community theater, an invitation that I got to come over and join some of my other fellow thespians. Yes, I am. I'm a thespian. Join some of my other fellow thespians in a reading of Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology at the local Unitarian Universalist congregation. And it was a transformative experience. Nobody was screaming in the building. Nobody was hollering about hellfire and damnation. Everybody was loving everybody else. There were Jewish people there. There were Muslim people there. People of the Western European, Asian extraction, you name it. They were all there, and we did that reading from Edgar Lee Masters, and it was profound, and it was moving, and it showed me that there was another way. And so with that in mind, a little reading this evening from, let's call it a performance by the Head On Radio Network players. A little reading this evening. I found something over at, between our news ninjas, Eugene Finnerman, the boys over at WD40.com, Clyde and Wally and Dookie. Dookie found this thing over at 23.6 that was just exquisite. It is a what you may or may not know that Joe Biden is presently in training for trying to figure out how to deal with that right-wing fundamentalist freak Sarah Palin, who thinks that Jesus rode to the Mount of Olives on the back of a brontosaurus. And so they found a thing over at 23.6 and linked it on the top of the page. With dialogue and pictures. You'll have to do the pictures for yourself, but that's okay because you're the smartest radio audience in the world. You'll have to imagine this for yourself, but we'll do the dialogue for you. Agnes is here with me. And what we have in mind here, this is, what it is Joe Biden has been practicing for his run-in with the Palin drone, the Pterodactyl, the Palinolithic one, Mussolini, Caribou Barbie. He's been practicing for all of that by debating, doing mock debates with Senator Jennifer Granholm of Michigan. And that was reimagined by the folks at 23.6.com. And so here, for your delectation, the Head On Radio Network players, with an understanding, an elaboration, an imagining of what that dialogue actually sounds like, since the 23.6 part piece was only done with photos and script. We're bringing it to life vocally, to live in your mind via the radio. So here we go.
Okay, Joe. So I'll pretend to be Sarah, and you just try to be you, okay? Let's just have fun with it. You ready?
Let's do this!
Whoa, easy, buddy.
Sorry, Jan, I'm just real excited to just tear that Jesus-loving, Russia-watching Eskimo a whole new...
Enough. That's exactly what you don't want to do. I know in most debates, having more knowledge, experience, and ability to make a convincing argument are a good thing. But in this case, they're all drawbacks for you.
Drawbacks? So in order to win, I have to try not to win?
Dude... You just have to show up and stand around for 90 minutes and try not to look mean. Can you pull that off?
Of course I can.
Okay. You need to dial it down about 50 notches. Turn on the charm.
How's this? Friendly?
You look like a jack-o'-lantern taking a difficult crap. You just need to look less threatening.
Now what about this? Hey, Sarah, great to see you, sweetie.
Still kind of scary. Can you do anything to seem warmer?
How's this look? Can I debate while holding my grandkid?
We'll ask. But let's try something else. Is there a place where you like to go in your head where everything feels warm and loving and happy?
My Christmas place. Christmas morning. In front of the tree.
Okay, it's Christmas morning. I'm Sarah Palin, and there's a big, beautiful tree behind me. Do you feel gentler, more generous?
Get out of my secret Christmas place, Sarah Palin!
Lose your temper again, Joe, and the shoe's going up your ass.
Sorry.
Okay, now I'll be Sarah, and you've just got a question about my experience dealing with Russia. We have tried a mission back and forth. We do. It's very important when you consider even national security issues with Russia as Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America where...
Oh, come on. Don't just pretend to speak in gibberish. Approximate the kind of answer she'd give.
That was a direct quote.
Holy shit.
Yep.
I think I get it.
Okay, so let's say I'm asked about the bailout. But ultimately, what the bailout does is help those who are concerned about the health care reform that's needed to help shore up our economy. It's got to be all about job creation, too.
Direct quote?
Yeah, afraid so.
Oh, damn it. Here we go. Here come the waterworks.
Joe, what's wrong?
She's just so helpless. So lost. I don't want to debate her. I want to take care of her. Give her shelter. A comfy chair to sit on and a nice storybook to read. Damn it, I want to protect her from guys like me.
Congratulations, Joe. You're ready for the debate.
Yeah, let's do this! Thank you, Agnes.
Thank you, Bob. Hi, everybody. Big hugs.
Bye, Agnes.
Bye.
Nah, I saw that, and I couldn't resist. I felt like that seemed like just too good a giggle to walk away from. And God knows, God only knows, we need a giggle. It's we're giggle poor lately. But sorry, okay, we gotta go. Almost hate to do this after that much fun. Okay. Gird your loins with the armor of righteousness, or whatever that the claptrap is in the New Testament, wherever it is. Get the hip waders on. Time to get into the swamp. Yeah, because you know they just about pull your boots off. Yeah, I'm hoping there's giggles tomorrow. I agree, Lottie. It probably is a little bit like that, what Joe Biden's trying to prepare for. Joe, remember, you're debating a moron. And this is a country that thinks having an IQ above freezing is elitism. Come on, Joe, dumb it down a little bit. Can't you say tookin' or something? I done come or whatever. No, don't talk about reading the newspapers, Joe. Everybody knows she doesn't read. That's unfair. All right. Hey, get those revolting emoticons of me off the screen. Come on, guys. Don't poke the radio host with a sharp stick. Jeez, you people. All right, into the swamp. A couple of them for you. Let's start here. Let's start with, this is really icky. Yesterday, of course, was Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, the day that presages the 10 days of repentance that leads up to Yom Kippur, the holiest of high holy Jewish days. And so when I read this story over at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, militaryreligiousfreedom.org, it seemed just even more gag-inducing. But this is prayer meeting, and that's what this stuff is for, so we don't have it just eaten up the rest of the week. So here we go. A U.S. Army soldier was brutally beaten by other soldiers in his platoon earlier this month following two incidents in which a drill sergeant allegedly used anti-Semitic slurs to address the soldier. Oh, God, you don't know. This story has to do with a young man by the name of Private Michael Handman. He's a 20-year-old. 5 weeks he spent in basic training, which is hell on earth enough as it is, down at Fort Benning in Georgia. And in week 5 of his basic training at Fort Benning, he's just been released from hospital. While in hospital, he was treated for, and just keep track, concussion, facial wounds, various and sundry severe oral injuries, bruising, etc. As a result of the attack by his own fellow soldiers.
Yeah, Jonathan Handman is Michael Handman's daddy. He said he got a phone call last week from his son's commanding officer, quote, to tell me that my son is okay and out of the hospital. He went on to say that apparently he got his clock cleaned and beat to the point that he was sent to the hospital by ambulance. And he had a concussion. He was in bad enough shape they did a head and neck CT scan. Here's how it went down. Young Michael Handman, all of 20, was lured into a laundry room at Fort Benning by other soldiers. There, they ambushed him, knocked him unconscious, and then while he was unconscious, these big, tough, brave defenders of democracy stomped the guts out of him while he was laying on the ground. Now, why would they do this? Why would they do this? I mean, the whole purpose of boot camp is to build unit cohesion and to focus the attentions and the violent natures of these impressionable young people on a perceived other, a perceived enemy. Well, there's only one problem. Michael Handman has the unmitigated gall to wear a yarmulke with his uniform. You know, the little beanie hat on the back of the head kind of thing. And he wears it during dinner. Apparently one is supposed to wear one's yarmulke during dinner. Well, the Neanderthals, the Christians, with whom Michael Handman is going through basic training, didn't like it. All right, Mom, Dad, little Johnny, little Timmy, little Susie moment here. There are some quotes coming. If you prefer that little Timmy, little Johnny, little Susie, little not hear real live human speech words that flow out of the filthy mouths of filthy bigots, I'm trying to give you enough time here to get them out of the room. Run along. Mommy and Daddy will let you back in just a minute. Uncle Bob is about to use some of the fun words we don't like for you to hear. Now, Uncle Bob isn't using those fun words just for shock value. Uncle Bob is trying to do actual reporting. Because the censored media, the terrestrial media, the newspapers, the so-called mainstream media, what we call the for-profit media, won't actually show you or deliver to you the real words as they are used, as they delineate the hate, the prejudice, the bigotry, the small-mindedness, and the otherwise poisonous sociopathy that is so prevalent in this society. No, they'll show it with dashes, or they'll go beep, and you have to guess which fun word was used. But this, by God, is still freedom of speech. We're going to use it. I take no pleasure in it. So anyway, Michael Handman shows up in the mess hall at Chow, and he sits down to have his meal with his fellow soldiers, his comrades, his brothers in arms. But because his particular religion requires him to wear his yarmulke at dinner, and the rest of them have to uncover, his drill sergeants call him a fucking Jew. And you kike.
Maggot kike, why won't, maggot private kike, why won't you take that hat off? Everybody else is uncovered at the dinner table. You need to take that hat off, private maggot kike.
Yeah. Recently, Michael Handman wrote a letter home to his mama. In that letter, he said, I have just never been so discriminated against, humiliated about my religion. And, you know, for any Jew in America to say that says a lot. Because there, that discrimination exists on almost every level. You know, maybe the United States of America is the place where Muslims and Jews can begin to heal the rift that runs between them. Because American society is prejudiced toward, biased against, and generally discriminatory toward both groups. Maybe this is where the healing begins. Michael Handman said, I just feel like I'm always looking over my shoulder, like my battle buddy heard some of the guys in my platoon talking about how they wanted to beat the shit out of me tonight when I'm sleeping. It just sucks. And the only justification they have is because I'm Jewish. And then he says, maybe your dad was right. The army is not the place for a Jew. Now that's another generation saying the army is not the place for a Jew. And that's a tragedy. Supposedly, the military is the place for people who, the young men and women who are interested in protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And yet, if you are Jewish in the American military, the enemy's domestic may be a threat to your very own existence, and they lie within your own ranks, your brothers in arms, your fellow warriors. His daddy said, I'm scared he'll become a victim of friendly fire. The army's not doing enough to protect him. They've mentally broken him to the point that he is willing to ruin his life by getting a dishonorable discharge. Now, they stomped, they damn near stomped to death Private Handman. So how did the folks at Fort Benning respond to that? Well, they sent him right back into the same platoon, right back there with the same soldiers, the same defenders of democracy, the same protectors of freedom who had attacked him in the first place. Then they moved him to a different company in the same platoon. But of course, the anti-Semitism has continued. Now Jonathan Handman is involved in a letter-writing campaign. He's from Georgia, okay? The Handman family is from Georgia in the first place. Jonathan Handman has written to U.S. Senator Saxby Chambliss, Repiglickin, who, of course, will be about as useful in this as teats on a boar hog. Oh, Chambliss has contacted the Pentagon, but I don't expect much to come of it. They do say that there's a commander's inquiry underway. Samuel Selby Rollinson, the Department of the Army's Deputy Chief of Staff, wrote to Saxby Chambliss, based on the inquiry, the Army found that two non-commissioned officers inadvertently violated the Army regulation concerning the free exercise of religion by requiring the soldier to remove his yarmulke and by using inappropriate terms when referencing the Jewish faith. Oh, it was inadvertent. They didn't know that calling somebody a fucking Jew was against the rules in the Army, or that using the word kike was somehow against regs. It was inadvertent. Oopsie! While the NCOs were not comments were not meant to be malicious. Cut! Take off that beanie! No, that's not meant to be malicious. They're trying to teach him to be a good soldier. What happens if his yarmulke falls off in the heat of battle? Huh? We're just trying to teach him to be a good soldier. Didn't you see that part in that movie where Patton slapped that feller? Yeah, he's just trying to make a good soldier out of him. That's what General Patton said. We're just trying to do what General Patton did. Hmm. They were not meant to be malicious and were done out of ignorance for regulations and cultural awareness. In other words, they were a bunch of dumbass rednecks. This does not excuse their conduct. Naughty, naughty racist. Bad bigot. Bad. No cookie. The command intends to reprimand both NCOs for their conduct, require them to present formal blocks of instruction on what religions are authorized for where, and finally the battalion chaplain will instruct all cadre members on the Army policy concerning religious accommodation. Here's the fun part. That Pentagon investigation? Yeah, you're going to love this. This is just charming. The Pentagon investigation didn't include any form of investigation into the fact that Michael Handman got knocked unconscious and then had his gut stomped out. That part, nah, that wasn't part of the investigation. Sorry. That wasn't, you know, that wasn't anti-Semitism. That was a platoon attempting to bring it. I mean, ain't you never seen the blanket party scene in Full Metal Jacket? That's what that was. Just trying to get somebody in line. Get him to be a member of the unit. Hoo-ah! Wow. That sentence, the investigation, and this is a story by Jason Leopold. The investigation by the Pentagon was limited to the anti-Semitism and did not include an inquiry into the beating. News 11. Or not. Now, we've had Mikey Weinstein on the program. And he recognized all of this because his son, Curtis, is in the Air Force Academy. And in the Air Force Academy, thousands of miles away from Fort Benning, Georgia, young officers in training at the Air Force Academy as compared to enlisted men going through boot camp in Fort Benning, all the way over in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Mikey Weinstein's son Curtis has also been called a fucking Jew. Mikey Weinstein's family, among other things, has had his house marked with a swastika and a crucifix. Mikey said the Army's wretched response to this hate crime is sadly and typically to trivialize the entire sordid matter. Those found to be responsible need to face a criminal trial by general courts-martial. The United States Army needs to learn, and learn fast, that persecuting anyone and marginalizing them by asserting that they lack character, integrity, veracity, and courage because of their chosen religious faith or lack thereof is exactly the same thing as attacking someone and telling them that they're stupid for the color of their skin. Shame, shame, shame on the United States Army. The company commander at Fort Benning is Lieutenant Dan Kim. Mikey Weinstein demanded a full briefing about the hate crime. Kim said he had 100 sworn affidavits.
Soldier, you will sign that affidavit. Sir, aren't you signing that affidavit? Private Pyle, sign that affidavit.
Denying that Private Handman was the victim of anti-Semitism, and even went so far as to insinuate that it was possible that Private Handman may have instigated the attack. Well, yeah, he did, by being Jewish. I mean, look at your history. That's instigation. Sure. Merciful God. Just astonishing. Just astonishing. 21st century, United States of America. But you know what? It's not surprising. This is a direct and proximate result of the climate of fear and mistrust and bigotry and prejudice and racism that rears its ugly head every time the repig-licking party, that party of Klansmen and grand dragons and exalted noble third, gets its hands on a little bit of power. Hey, it's Wednesday. Everybody sing. Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Yeah, you know. the United States military is filthy with fundamentalist, right-wing, religious indoctrination and insanity and bias. And anybody who doesn't know Jesus Christ as his personal Lord and Savior is going to be called an effing something or another. Effing pagan, effing Jew, effing Muslim, effing Haji. They're all going to get called something. Because that is the nature of religious fundamentalism. Only those, you know, if only you'd believe like I believe, baby, we'd get by. You remember the Jefferson Starship tune, right? Yeah. So let's roll on and go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother.
Hey, Albert, what's happening, man?
Well, that's a pretty disgusting little story there.
Yeah, you want to shower? I want to go. Yeah, yuck.
Well, it's not surprising. I mean, if the military, like, you know, getting our military spending down is a big goal of mine. But at the same time, I'm fully aware that if military spending goes down and we make the military smaller, our prison sizes are going to go up. I mean, it's the breeding ground for that kind of stuff. And in a sense, I kind of wish that guy, I know it's wrong to say, but in a sense, that boy should have listened to his grandfather. And it's a sad thing, you know, he's going through that, and it's exposing an ugly, dark side of this place. But, hey, it's Fort Benning, you know? You know, that's what we get out of Fort Benning.
And maybe, you know, there's nothing that says that his grandfather was also in Georgia, but his granddad's probably got a few extra years than the young man does, being Jewish in Georgia. And, you know, it's sad because one of the oldest Jewish communities of profound depth and length and history is there in Savannah and Atlanta. But from what I know, it's been an uphill fight all the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's. I mean, you sit there and you think about the military. I mean, there's legalized segregation in it. And, you know, there's a different ranking system in that respect. You know what I'm saying? It's a tough little. If someone's been in the military, and this is what they're talking about. This is kind of it's a tough one, but it's kind of like a class warfare, and it's kind of like a little like clubs, and you're either in it or you're not. And if you and I are an E3, right, or an E what have you, you know, yeah, we're in the same club, we're in the same rank, you know. But if you or I are an E3 and you're a Jew or you're gay, it's a totally different thing. And you know, the military, you know, I mean, you sit there and you look at that military and the way that they try to, you know, just run people's minds. And what did Full Metal Jacket say, right? The Marine Corps doesn't want robots. The Marine Corps wants killers. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to break down everybody. I don't know what they're trying to do to this guy. I don't know why they would sit there and do that other than they're just savage beasts. And
yeah, well, that's the point. You know, and I think you touched on it earlier. You got to remember what's happened to the Army's recruiting standards, Albert.
Did you ever remember the relaxation?
You know, it's okay if you're a crook. We'll take, you know, any mother's son will do, including the convicted. I mean, isn't that the policy now?
Yeah, well, look at, I remember hearing stories about, oh, yeah, you know, I got in trouble when I was a kid and it was going to military or, you know, or go to jail, right? Well, I thought they stopped doing that. And then I heard about Sarah Palin. I'm like, oh, my God, they're doing it. They're doing
it. Oh, yeah,
again.
No, that never went away, Albert. That never went away. Son, you got some trouble going on here, and, well, I tell you what, next hearing, we're going to try your butt, and then we're going to send you to prison as an adult, unless, I'm going to continue this thing, and next time we come back, I don't want to see your butt in that chair. I want somebody to hand me induction papers from the United States military, and if that is so, and if you serve honorably, this will all go away, boy. Oh, it happens all the time.
I guess I kept my nose clean, but you know, there's actually a real picture, Armed Forces recruiting place. It's a picture, and what it is is inside the picture. There's a red circle, you know, someone put in, you know, with paint or what have you, and they're pointing out a poster in it, and it says in the poster, it's not shop at all because you could tell it's behind the window. It says suicidal teens welcome. So you want to talk about military recruiting, suicidal teens welcome. Anyway, yeah, the military is, it's it. I mean, they're torturing now. Oh, no, they're enhanced interrogation. It is disgusting. Not for nothing, though. I've been up pretty early. I went to the Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama rally.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Yeah, it was unfreaking believable. I got tons of pictures. I fainted when he came out. No, I'm just kidding. Bob, there were so many people there, it blew my mind. I mean, I was like it's just going
to
be me.
Now, how far did you have to go for this? Because, I mean, you're fairly rural, right, Albert?
Yeah, I'm rural. You could call me that. About 30 minutes, not too bad, not too bad at all. The worst part about it was getting the kids up at 6:30 in the morning. But I had waffles ready and had the coffee made and did that. The wife was actually one of the probably the hardest, but she did good. We all did good. We got down there, and the line was literally 5 miles long. Seriously, we walked around this park twice. Like the line was it was the strangest thing. I couldn't believe it. It was like a function. It was like an ant, like ants. And they'll sit there and they'll loop in between themselves.
Oh yeah. Right.
It was packed. It was just packed. It was unbelievable. And, he came out and he did his thing. He said a couple things that I really liked, and he said a couple things I kind of went, ugh, and he went, said one thing that I went, wait, what did he say? And I don't know, maybe you have it in front of you, it's at the tip of your fingers or have you, but he said something regarding putting his money into alternative energies. Now, it sounded like, and this is sad, this is, prayer meeting time, I guess, he said that it sounded like he said 15 million a year instead of 15. I'm like, did he say million? Because it sounded like million. And I hope he didn't just say 15 million, because 15 million in terms of alternative energy is nothing. I mean, even 15 billion is a little light. But so
100 billion, 2 million jobs, Reuters.
Okay. All right.
No, but I mean, that's the statistic. That's what it's going to take to rebuild this country.
Yeah, at least. Well, that would be a better investment. And he talked a lot about that. He talked about making proper investments. He talked about, all the popular things. I think he had a couple of little things he hit on. He, overall is good. My kids, I wanted them to see it, but, they were too good. They were having fun with the rocks. So that was good. But, it was an insanely busy thing, and it was, for a cold Wisconsin morning, it was a fall Wisconsin morning. It's definitely cold out here. It was probably about 48, 50 degrees when we got up. So, it was pretty.
For you hardy Wisconsinites, that's just light jacket weather. Come on.
I'm still not native, but I had my jacket. There was a couple people out there in flip flops and short sleeves. I thought they were crazy but.
I never put socks on until the snow flies.
Yeah, we got them. There, no doubt. We have those snow bums, I guess you'd call them. But, and even then, it was seriously bad. I couldn't believe that. It must have been, the entire city was shut down. I mean, it was a big rally. It was a good 10,000-15,000 people there. Easy.
Well, did they all seem to be in accord, or were there some weirdos who weren't with the program?
There was a bunch of union there, and there was a bunch of, the entire hippie co-op health food store, the entire staff was down there. You couldn't get a latte, organic latte if you wanted to. But
with soy milk foam?
Yeah, none of that stuff. Because it was just like there was a lot of progressive stuff down there. I mean, it was actually one of those things about downtown La Crosse that I was remarking on that, before Bush took office, there was downtown La Crosse actually sucks a lot more now than it did. It used to be all right in a way that, what I mean by all right would be like there were like family-run hardware stores that have been there for 250 years, family-run shoe stores that have been there for, since the city has been around. And they had a bunch of like old, nice old shops like that. And, granted, nothing lasts forever, but, ever since Bush took office, gone, just empty stores everywhere. So in a sense, where Barack would go to talk like that, and he did it on the street. That's another thing. It was on the street. They blocked it all off and everything like that. And I think for him to go down there and talk in a place that is actually getting hit pretty hard economically, I mean, heck, if Pabst Blue Ribbon didn't come in, or whomever it was, Stroh's, I think, didn't come in and buy Heilemans, I mean, forget it. We'd be doomed. Because the only other industry out here really is Trane and a couple of other foundries and stuff. But other than that, you know, this is a good working class place, and he needs to win this town. I mean, and I don't foresee him having a problem, but he really needs to win this town. And in terms of people protesting, I only saw one, and it was a lady holding up a child, a red abortion sign. It was one of those kind of things.
An abortion moron.
But other than that, I mean, I got a picture of an 83-year-old man with a handwritten sign talking about, don't buy anything. He says, don't buy anything. You know, stop inflation. Don't buy anything. Stop buying everything, right? And he says that, and somebody, you know, behind me kind of goes, snickers at him, you know. And I kind of, and this is about the limit of, I guess you would call dissent in terms of, you know, being a good person, I heard. And the guy was like, don't buy anything. And I kind of turned around and I looked at him. I'm like, well, he's lived through it. Maybe we should listen to him. You know, the guy had been through it. You know, the guy was raised in the brain. He was old. He was an old man. And, you know, it was nice to see him standing out there at, what was that, 7:15 to 8 in the morning? All the way, the whole time we were in line. We were in line for about an hour, just walking and walking, you know. So it was... It was a pretty good time. It almost had a carny atmosphere at times, but other than that, it seemed pretty excited and it wasn't too bad. I didn't see anybody faint or anything, and you know, he told us some, you know, personal stories about his own life, and you know, he seemed genuine to me, and you know, that was pretty, you know, I got cynic in me too, you know, so, you know, there's a couple things he said I liked, and a bunch of stuff he said he liked, a couple things I was kind of like, eh, and one or two things I just kind of was like, you know, but other than that, you know, there was one guy that I was standing next to, and he was a little crazy, telling him about the horn and all that, what all that other stuff, and, you know, so we talked for a little bit, and there's a ton of young people there, though, seriously. I mean, it was... It made me feel very old. I'm not that old, but it did. I mean, it was wall-to-wall, like, voting age people, without a doubt. A bunch of people, actually, that I actually know that I was surprised to see. But I guess, you know, the economic realities or, you know, and the economic ethical dilemmas that we face now in this country are coming home to roost, and people are getting sick of it. I'm telling you, I think Barack's got this place on lockdown. I mean, I didn't see any bankers. No, I don't know. Maybe they were wearing, you know, hats and...
No, they were sitting at home nervously watching their pet portfolios.
But no, sir. There was a guy I was standing next to. He protests when McCain comes and all that other stuff. He's like, yeah, you know, I don't see any bankers either. And he's like, yeah, I only see them when McCain comes. And you know, there's no way that they would have been able, like the Republicans right here. They couldn't fill the road the way he did. It was a good downtown. It was a good 10,000-15,000 people come out in the morning like that.
Well, I was just looking at the official CNN map, and they've got Wisconsin still in play. They've got Minnesota and Iowa light blue, Illinois dark blue, and Wisconsin yellow, as in I don't know, striped down the middle of the road. Not there yet.
I have a real hard time buying that. I mean, there are, and I don't, I mean, you know, you can never go by signs, but I'm just going by what I know of the communities around here. And in terms of the bigger cities, I mean, if you, like, for example, my town right here is about 2,000, and we're probably, there might be a little bit more Republicans here than, you know, in the next biggest city, Viroqua, which is around 6,000. But 6,000, Viroqua is just about probably an 80%, 70%. That's where most of the people live, you know. I mean, that's 70% Obama, no doubt, that place. I mean, they have their own little local community. And any time where you got a place that has a strong local community, you're going to have strong progressive people and, you know, a lot of Greens and all that other stuff. And, you know, they all know. They'd love to be able to vote for a Nader or whatever. But, you know, they realize that, you know, dream time is over. It's not the time right now. Now is the time to completely... You know,
yeah, I want a pony is not on the ticket. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. The party's over. It's time to.
Well, this latest map, you know, it's CNN, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. The latest map has Nevada, Colorado, Missouri, Wisconsin, Ohio, Virginia, New Hampshire, and Florida still toss up. But even Montana and West Virginia are shown as just being pink, not red. You know,
I'll tell you what. We win if Obama wins West Virginia, it's done.
It's the Kennedy principle, isn't it, Albert? The same thing. You know, if Kennedy could convince a bunch of West Virginians that it would be okay to have a Catholic president, then yeah, you're right. It's done.
Yeah, just we got to. You know, someone should almost go do an intervention with those people on the quad that you played. What was that last night? That was brutal, Bob. That was brutal.
Well, see, it doesn't say where that came from. Then Agnes was, I showed it to Agnes, and she said, please, please tell me it's not West Virginia. Oh, please, Bob, please tell me it's not West Virginia. I said, I don't know. It doesn't say. I just, you know, it's the accent. And that's a,
yes.
And, you know, I said, that narrows it down to the western tip of Virginia, southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, and eastern Tennessee. And maybe the northeastern corner of Georgia.
And she said those words like you say them when you're exaggerating, and I don't know, whomever it is, I trust you, you're the authority on that, but those people, somebody needs to do an intervention on those people. And you know, not for nothing, I think Obama should spend some more time there. I mean, you know, I was hearing something on Snoozy Radio this morning, and they're talking about how, you know, Obama's trying to make the Republicans, you know, spend money in places where they never had to before. Well, I mean, I really think, you know, and sure, certainly, he needs to spend some time in, you know, in Wisconsin. You know, that's a given. But I think we're a little bit more progressive. Like, man, we have those people. Like, there ain't no doubt about it. They're here, and I know they're here. But, like, there's a lot of me's here, too. You know, there's a lot of...
Oh, yeah. And there's a long and honorable progressive, and some would say liberal, but I think the original word was progressive back when it was being invented, tradition in Wisconsin and through the American farmland.
Well,
I mean, that's where it was born.
Yeah, I mean, we got strong unions and then Lutherans, and, you know, the Lutherans in terms of their conservative, sure. I mean, they'll vote local Republicans in. Like, but that's different. I mean, look. Well, I could just speak from my region.
Am I mistaken? You know, fighting Bob LaFollette, whatever. Sorry, somebody's going to have to tell.
Fighting Bob.
Yeah. That guy was a Republican. Okay.
Yeah.
He was the original progressive Republican.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those kind of Republicans are not allowed to even so much as make it out of the crib anymore.
No, they're called at most libertarians now. I mean, and I got a ton of libertarian friends, and they call themselves, oh, I'm more libertarian, you know, oh, that makes sense. Or, you know, just because I can kind of understand where they're at, you know, because it's like there'll be certain aspects that, you know, they don't trust government, period. And when is government giving you a reason to trust them? Damn, they can't even do their jobs.
I don't trust this government. You know, I did the phone call thing again today. I sat there and I worked myself up a little, you know me, I got to work up a little comment so that, because you got to make them remember you when you call the congressional offices. So on the one hand, I called Jay Rockefeller's office again. Phone was off the hook. It had to ring like 20 times before the voicemail even picked up. Okay. He didn't want to hear because he was going to, you know, I guess they're probably voting as we speak, because the vote was scheduled to be taken after sundown out of respect for the end of Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm.
They were to vote on the bailout bill tonight. And so Rocky failure, J-Rock, took his phone off the hook. So I left him, a little message that said, listen. West Virginians are getting slaughtered at the supermarket, massacred at the mall, and pasted at the pump. This is no time for Wall Street welfare queens to have their way with Senator Rockefeller once again. and, you know, left my name and my number and all of that stuff. And it, is he going to? No, he's going to vote for the bailout because it's got all, you know, it's got little tax sweeteners in it now.
Yeah, see, this is my, this is what Brock said that made me just have a little squirt there of anger. Is he changed? He called it. You know what he called it? You know what he called
it? Oh, it's a rescue plan.
Yeah, he called it a rescue plan.
Now, well, you know what? You know who called? And of all the people, Albert, of all the people, for heaven's sakes, for crying out loud, of all the people. To use the Bush administration's phonied up, dummied up, ginned up, faked up, rubed up word, rescue plan. You know who used that? Rachel Maddow called it a rescue plan. Honey, don't let them have your language. It's all, I mean, your language and your brains are your stock in trade. That's all you got.
They need to read 1984. Again.
And again and again and again. Yeah.
And again. And it needs to be on tape, and it needs to be put in their ear and just constantly played, like seriously. Like, you can't forget that for a minute. Like, no, it's
rescue?
Yeah.
So now we're supposed to have the mental image of some poor little sun-baked Wall Street banker withering away in his three-piece Savile Row suit, bobbing in a life raft out in the open ocean, living on the innards of what live fish he can catch with his bare hands, waiting for working America to rescue him?
Wilson! Wilson!
Wilson! Exactly! Cried like a baby when Wilson disappeared.
No! Oh, and he did also, let me just kind of, he was talking, he said rescue, and then he kind of qualified it with some, you know, other stuff, but I heard rescue, and it's kind of like calling your wife fat and then expecting to make love or something like that, you know, it was kind of like that, and I just kind of was, oh, what did he just say? And then he said some other things about something else, and I really didn't catch it. It sounded good in theory or something, but he lost me. He lost me at rescue. Seriously, like, and then I gave him a couple claps here and there, and then it was over. And I hope that whatever they do, and they're talking about rescuing us because, you know, we're tied. That was kind of his little mantra. Is that Wall Street is tied to Main Street, and I'm really getting sick of the word Main Street. I'm getting sick of that word. It's like homeland to me, and it's mean.
Yeah, but it's what it is it's journalistic laziness, myself included. Yeah. It's a euphemism that's a placeholder for the America that is really, really honest to goodness real. Now, I'm not, and of course it conjures, you know, a lot of homey, warm, leave it to Beaver imagery. Because the fact of the matter is, Albert, there's not a lot of Main Street left. Thanks to the likes of Walmart, Main Street has tumbleweeds blowing down it in a whole lot of America.
Seriously. I mean, it's the same thing with Homeland. But in terms of Main Street, it is that. You know, we don't have any mom. Man, you know, I actually do, Bob. I don't know if you have one near you. You probably do. But I have a mom-and-pop video store. We have one of those here. Like, this is like a little nestled little nook of a time capsule. I mean, but we don't have a lot of other things.
No, we got a hardware store.
We got a hardware store.
Well, we've got a florist. No mom-and-pop video. The closest thing you can do is the little convenience store down the road that really has nothing in the way of a selection.
Yeah. Yeah. The gas stations, yeah, they got the videos too. But, you know, and that's why when I hear Main Street, man, we need a bailout, you know. And they were talking about removing capital gains taxes on small business. That's awesome. You better do it, though. Like, seriously. And you better not slide in those bastards that are on Wall Street making $100 million a year and having, you know, being in charge of companies that are raking in $100 billion a year. You know, I don't want to hear about that. They need to pay their capital gains tax. The reason we're in the situation we're in, the reason that the system is rotted from within is because they've been sucking off and, you know, sucking the cream off. You know, they got all the milk and the apples and, you know, this is bull.
Since you mentioned that, Albert, I got one of those hair curlers here in front of me that you and everybody else are going to just, you know, have one of those over. Agnes sent this to me earlier today from MSNBC. And this is just a killer. It is
laying down.
Yeah, you better. Okay, and frankly, go ahead and crack another lager. Alan Fishman, you know who this guy is? Alan Fishman was the head man at WAMU.
Oh yeah, that's right.
All right, here's the fun part. He got his job 3 weeks ago. He'd been on the job 3 weeks when they threw him out and sent him packing. Want to hear what he got?
Like 20 million?
19. 19. No. Yeah, $19 million for less than 3 weeks' work. In other words, he got a $7.5 million hiring bonus and $11.6 million in severance pay. Just let that one rattle around for a while. $19 million. I mean, this isn't like that Carly Fiorina, Purina, whatever her name is, John McCain's corporate CEO BFF.
Yeah.
You know, she was at Hewlett-Packard for a while screwing stuff up. I mean, they're still unscrewing stuff she screwed up.
Yeah.
And she walked away with $42 million. But she was there for a little bit. You can at least do a little bit of long division on her on her time there.
Exactly.
This guy was there for less than 3 weeks and walked out the door with $19 million in his pocket.
Well, the average CEO works, what, 4 or 5 hours a day and then has meetings and coffee and whatever. You know, I don't even know if they work that many hours a day.
Well, you have no idea how frustrating it is making all those trips all the way across the pond. You get the limo from Heathrow. You go all the way to Savile Row. Then the tailor has to sit there and take the measurements and, sir, do you dress left or, sir, do you dress right? And then it's back on the plane. Then you got to go back for the fit. It's hot. Dadgummit, we just don't understand out on Main Street, Albert. It's hard being a CEO. It's hard work.
It's hard work. That's right. Never let that one fly ever. It's hard work. It's hard work being a CEO. Oh. I mean,
do you realize how much salt a CEO has to avoid from all the because of all the caviar they're forced to consume?
Exactly. The blood pressure goes over.
It's an occupational hazard. The blood pressure thing.
Well, that's why they have masseuse, and that's why they have their trainer, and that's why they have their little, you know, toys in the closet. And I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't even know these. What do they do? I mean, honestly, all right, let's get out of that. What do these people do? Like, honestly.
Well, you know, consider the lilies.
Well, I see a lot of co-op corporations, like, you know, operating in second and third world countries, and actually even former first world nations like this one, you know, and I see a lot of these co-op corporations coming to be, and, you know, they're profitable for their members. I mean, it's not like anybody's going to be making, you know, a $40 million or $20 million in 3 weeks, but, you know, it's like when these people die, they'll just know that they've done something good for the land that they lived in. You know,
well, I've got an update for you, Albert. Senator Obama on the floor of the Senate just asked his fellow senators to pretty please vote for the bailout.
Yeah. Well, it's unchanged from what it was?
Oh, no, this is the Senate version where they've added the tax breaks and stuff like that to try to get the Republicans in the House to go, tax breaks,
yeah,
and vote for it on Friday.
Well, what's our choice, bud?
No. I'm voting for Obama.
Yeah, I know.
And I would not advise anybody to do anything different.
Yeah. I mean, but It's like when I was talking to this guy, him and I were standing on some grass, and he says something that you really, I never thought of you the minute he said it. He's like, I feel like I'm standing on the grassy knoll. And I was like, ooh, you know, it's like, you know, don't bring up that. Bob says don't. But
don't whisper it into the universe's ear. Don't.
you got to get it out. This is just, you know, nobody was expecting Jack, and, you know, they weren't really expecting that. You know, but this is, at least we're expecting it. Maybe it'll keep it from happening, shining the light in the closet, kind of, hey, be good. But, you know, and I kind of sat there, I'm like, well, you know, and he said a couple things. This guy and I looked at each other, and he was just like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I hear you, you know. But it's like there's things that he has to say, or he will get a bullet in the head. I mean, you know, you can't just come out and, you know.
Well,
I mean,
consider this for a minute, Albert, and this is one of those things that drove me crazy earlier today. I get these emails from the Democratic National Committee, right? And they've been involved in playing Count the Lies with John McHoover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it keeps them pretty busy because they hit 80 today.
Really?
Yeah, and this is one of those that's sort of flip-floppy, crazy, sort of makes your stomach go, because today's John McHoover lie concerns the fact that the McHoover campaign is running ads in four states in which McHoover says that Obama opposes clean coal. He's lying, McHoover is, because Obama does support clean coal. I mean, this is one of those where I was hoping, you know, oh, please let it be, please let that one be the truth. I'll feel so much better. But no, he really does, because Barack Obama has an energy plan, and in that plan is a suggestion that we invest in low emissions coal plants and that we create five first of a kind commercial scale coal fired plants with carbon capture and sequestration. And see, that's the problem. You can sequester all the carbon you want. You can capture it. You can put it in a cage. You can take it to the circus. You can do anything with the carbon that you want to, but it's still there because you still burned it. You still burned the dadgum coal. And what's more, just to drive the tack home a little bit harder, you can say, oh, look at this. It's clean coal. We sequestered the carbon. We captured it. It's there. You know, it's in a little box.
Yeah.
But you still have to go back to the mine.
Yeah.
And you have to see the environmental the hell on earth that's created. But, you know, it's okay as long as we're creating it in Appalachia because, you know, after all, us Appalachians, we're not real Americans. We don't deserve clean air or clean water. We don't deserve for our children not to have IQ deficits from all the mercury that their mothers have ingested. You know, I mean, because we, you know, just a bunch of hillbillies.
Well, it's all downstream, so none of us are real Americans.
No. And that's the trick. All the women of America of childbearing age have enough mercury in them to account for a 10-point IQ deficit. All of them. Even the coal executives' wives. Yeah. Nice, ain't it?
They got the vaccine, though. You know how that goes. But honestly, you know, let's raise the spirits a little bit. There's a couple of older ladies I was talking to online, and they were totally against it because, as I said to you, we have that coal waste dump they want to throw out down in my county. And so there are a lot of people out here. They said, yeah, why should we be burning West Virginia up in Wisconsin? I mean, you know, I was like, whoa. You know, so the people there, you know, like back to what we were talking about, you know, when you first asked, you know, the people there probably wish Obama maybe was a little bit more progressive. But, you know, I think that might have to come with time. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I guess in a sense, like, Appalachia, you know, you just kind of have to, and I hate to say this to you, bud, but, you know, we all have to do it. You kind of have to bite the bullet and grin and bear it for a little bit longer. And, you know, hopefully in this, you know, we don't get comfortable and lackadaisical when it comes to actually making some progress on this green.
Well, no, I don't disagree with you because Barack Obama is intelligent enough to be persuaded. John McHoover is dumber than homemade stupid. I mean, this is, you know, remember, he's 894th out of a class of 899.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not good.
No.
I mean, that's a bunch of gentlemen's D's, right?
Oh, did you hear that question? Did you hear that? I'm sorry. You just, you know, we're talking about his intelligence and that question that he asked, that he was asked by that lady in Iowa, the editor of the newspaper, and she asked him, you know, have you been on government insurance, taxpayer government insurance your entire adult life? Have you heard that yet?
I don't think so.
No, you have to immediately. Like, I think Crooks and Liars has it. One of those guys has it, and that is that's a Palin. I'll get back to you, or whatever other dumb things she says. That's an amazing, awesome little sound clip. You have to play it. But I'm gonna get going here, buddy.
All right.
Hey, bless you all, and I'm gonna enjoy and. Yeah, we'll talk with you later.
All right, take care, Albert. Glad you were able to get out to the rally today. Did the girls enjoy it?
Yeah, they had fun. But man, that's exhausting. You know,
Oh yes, it is.
Kids in early morning. We're a second and third shift, so it's a little different. You know, in the late morning, but early morning like that. Ooh, I'm gonna have to go take a nap.
Well, we're old guys. Take care, Albert. We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
And let's... welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm just dandy. Fine as frogs here. How about you?
I'm dandy, too. I think that was my problem with Obama was I didn't think he was liberal enough, you know, and I still have that, but I'm really liking him and all. But I'm hoping he will be persuaded, you know, against the clean coal and all like that. Because he did say something about that. I heard him in one speech. He said something about the clean coal.
Well, he's done that hustle around here, and you know, it's about getting votes.
Yeah. But I had a couple of little asides. I didn't know I was going to have one of them until today. Accidentally heard the news, the local news.
Okay.
And found out we have some new laws in Florida starting today.
Yeah.
progressively fine those who exceed the speed limit by 50 miles an hour. The fine is $1,000 for the first offense. $2,500 for the second, and $5,000 for the third, and loss of driver's license for 10 years.
Ouch!
And they had the patrol on there, you know, talking about it, and he was talking about it was, you know, like I guess 10 miles over the speed limit, you know, up to 50. Well, whatever.
Grand.
And then increase fines for motorcyclists who stunt ride or exceed the speed limit by more than 50 miles per hour. It carries a maximum prison term of up to 5 years for a third offense. Now, can you imagine this? Now, I don't know if you've got any sons that are in their teens yet or not.
Not yet, but I'm already getting, Dad, I want a motorcycle. And you know what my answer to Ferg is?
Well, even driving, you know.
That bug's biting hard.
Music, don't put any signs on there because my son, they pick on, you know, because most of them are rednecks, and they pick on the ones that are driving around with something with rock on it, you know. And they stop them for the most stupid things. And we'll give them fines.
Sure.
But I thought that some of the fines we had already were bad. But this, I got this off the internet after I saw it on the news because I thought, well, maybe that's just for Tampa. But no, it's a brand new law here in Florida.
Well, I've got a buddy who refers to traffic ticket cops as tax collectors with funny hats. Juanita.
Yeah, and that's, do it to the poor people. You know,
sure, but that's part and parcel of it all because of the fact that George W. Bush gave away the farm to his buddies on Wall Street. You know, that top 0.1% of all Americans in turn who own, you know, 90% of the wealth of this country. Because he did that, states are having to scramble to find ways to make up for the lost revenues, and one of the ways that you do that is by jacking up the fines.
But who can pay $1,000? I don't make that much a month.
No,
who can pay that? I mean, and it's mostly kids they stop. Well, not mostly. I shouldn't say that, but it is a lot of it. It's them, and you can go. You can appear before court, and it don't make any difference. You know, you're just gonna have pay more cost.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay it, they can, you know, if you don't pay it, they can pick you up, and put you in jail. And it looks to me as why they're trying to find an excuse to put more and more people in prison. Especially this thing for motorcyclists, saying they stunt ride.
Well, see, but that's kind of
interpretation, wouldn't it?
Well, sure, that's an interpretation, but it's also that's also a big old fraud too, because no police officer in his great big gas guzzling lead footed lead sled cruiser can catch a guy on a motorcycle. I mean, I know members of the West Virginia State Police here who told me flat out, you know, sort of on the QT, and I won't name names or anything, they said, no way in hell we're ever going to chase a motorcycle or a four-wheeler. Can't catch them.
But I say beware of a tourist or whatever, you know, my gosh. This is ridiculous.
Indeed it is.
And I got another little aside.
Sure.
You know, Anna Putnam is our congressional leader in these parts.
Okay.
He's my congressman, in other words.
Right.
Okay, we've got a guy running against him, and he doesn't have a lot of money, but he's got a lot of great experience. His name is Doug Tudor. So this this woman, she's head of the Democratic Association, well, they call it anyway here, and I get emails from her about all kinds of stuff. And she has sent me about trying to get help for him. And I don't know if she was talking about he can't get help from the DCCC, which all these initials I found out that stands for Democratic
Congressional Campaign Committee.
Right.
Yeah, if you're really, really good and really, really progressive, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee will sure as God made little green apples hang you out to dry, Juanita.
Well, let me tell you, have you heard of this congresswoman down here? And I thought she was really good, and this is not the first time I've heard something about
Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Yeah.
Yeah, that she's supporting the
that Cuban friend of hers?
Yeah, Ross.
A little nasty.
Yeah, the really, really vile, nasty lady.
Yeah, Republican.
Ileana Ross Lettinen.
Okay. All right. This is what I was saying. She said, because I was saying to her, I sent an email to them, the whatever that name is, CCC. And I understand she's supporting a Republican woman from Miami who's not a nice person, in my opinion. Is she also supporting Adam Putnam? Because this is what happened. He went to the, Doug Tudor went to the convention. And he asked her about getting some help. And she told him, said, get big bucks and then maybe we'll talk. I don't have time for you other than that.
Yeah, you got to raise a boodle of money before they'll even look at you.
And anyway, I was thinking, you know, they could at least give somebody some, publicity, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Because this guy's really, I think, really be good. And,
see, we had a decent guy running against Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia's 2nd District in 2006. His name was Mike Callahan, good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Know him personally, you know, actually, you know, stops and speaks to me on the street, that kind of stuff. And he would have been a miles ahead replacement of Shelley Moore Capito because she was, I think she was the number two recipient of Tom DeLay's dirty money. The Democratic Campaign Congressional Committee would not, for love nor money, support him. You know, they want a Democratic majority, but they want their kind of a Democratic majority, Juanita.
Yeah. I wondered why they didn't support some of them, and now I know, you know.
Well, look, Tony Truppiano, a tremendous human being. You may have heard of him. did liberal radio for years out of Detroit. He ran against an old, worthless, shows up, draws his breath and his pay, right-winger, pig-licking, in, I think, what, Michigan's ninth in 2006. Democrat, and was running a hell of a campaign, raised money, pouring the energy into it, and came within a gnat's butt of beating that incumbent little puke. And Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee wouldn't touch him either.
Well, I guess I can tell you something about The View. They've been arguing, you know, about different things, and I read in the on the internet yesterday where poor little Elizabeth has just not been.
Yeah,
there,
you
right?
sent that and along
she might
to
go
me.
Over to Fox.
She might, yeah, she might take her blonde hair and go home.
Those, said she's the lone Republican on the top panel, not to mention the youngest. She's not the youngest. The new one is the youngest. She's 31 and the other one's 30. She just can't seem to win against her loud liberal counterparts, Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg. And I told you, Whoopi Goldberg has got the patience of Jeb the way she acts. I mean, I don't know, poor little feller.
I know, just makes your little heart bleed peanut butter, doesn't it?
Yeah, and today Barbara was back on, and she said, I didn't understand everything she was saying, but she said, Elizabeth, I want to give you an opportunity to say that you think that Sarah Palin is more qualified than, has more experience than Barack Obama. Well, you're acting like, you give me a pop quiz, you know. We know what that is. And then she said, she started saying, well, she's a National Guard and this and the other, you know. And I thought, that she would love to just talk the whole show and not let anybody say anything. Because every time somebody else starts to talk, she has to interrupt and try to put her point apart. But anyway, I want you to know that, bless her little heart, she's feeling bad. It was all right for her not to stand up for Rosie when she was over on Fox TV and they were saying that Rosie hated the troops and she didn't open her mouth that she likes to run so much.
Oh, no, but no, but she wants it. She wants, no, because, well.
And that was the problem with Rosie. She acted like she was friends with Rosie.
It's that white privilege thing again.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
But anyway.
Well, you know, I'll feel so bad if she has to go. What did that article say? So she can be with her own kind?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they must mean stupid.
But I'll tell you anyway. But I don't know about that fine deal.
Watch the needle of the speedometer and whatever the speed limit is, you drive 1 mile an hour under it.
Well, I don't have to drive now. I don't have a vehicle. So.
Well, I mean, but, yeah, I know what you mean. But just general practice.
Like, I used to have a yard man. He had an old ranchero.
Oh, yeah.
He just kept it glued together, you know, kind of like they have it down in Cuba. Well, I think they do better. But anyway, it would go anywhere, but he'd drive it back about 25 or 30 miles an hour everywhere. Because I know he took me some places, you know, trying to help me out, and bless his heart, he since passed away, but he was, he had that little truck, and I said, that's the way you're going to have to be, just drive 30 miles an hour everywhere you go.
Exactly. Juanita, good to hear from you, dear.
Okay, you take care.
All right, you too now.
Have a good night.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. View correspondent Juanita calling from Central Florida, and just to keep things rolling, or not, let's check in on this if you don't care. I'm kind of curious about this. I want to see what's going on in the Senate. I want to see if they're see what's happening with this so-called debate over what is now a rescue plan instead of the naked, shameful bailout of the people who do $19 million for 3 weeks of work. Let's see what's happening with this. Might be kind of informative. I hope they're not in a break. Does C-SPAN go to a commercial break? I don't know.
Washington Mutual, who I wouldn't necessarily applaud for its subprime lending rates or for its use and backing of credit default swaps.
Maria Cantwell of Washington.
I would ask you to consider the fact that as that institution was forced into sale by this government, who were the winners and losers in that? J.P. Morgan got the assets of that institution and benefited from that. In fact, they predicted that night on a conference call that after 1 year and their investment, they would have a $512 million return on that investment, a 27% return in 1 year. Now, the FDIC got some money out of that. And to say nothing about the over 60,000 shareholders that were wiped out with zero, my complaint is, where is J.P. Morgan standing up for the retirement plans, the deferred compensation plans, and other packages that the employees at that company were due? So it's very convenient for us to now choose that we are going to add to J.P. Morgan's bottom line. In fact, if we would instead do what I'm suggesting, have an equity proposal, instead of having TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, as the roof over America, instead an equity program where the United States would leverage our capital and get a 10 to 12% return.
Well, isn't this interesting? Apparently, debate began about 3:25 Eastern Time.
Our nation would be better funded.
And will continue up till the end of this program, and then the voting will begin. You know, I hear that talking, and Maria Cantwell's leaning over the podium and kind of gesturing strongly with a pen in her hand. And the folks up that way say that she's a pretty good senator. And I don't know what position she's taking here. But we are severely wanting in greatness in our Senate, are we not?
Madam President, Senator from Illinois, recognized for 5 minutes. Thank you very much. Mr. President.
The Assistant Majority Leader.
13 days ago, I sat in on a meeting just a few feet away from this chamber. At this meeting was the chairman of the...
Oh, there must be a jillion people on this.
And the Secretary of the Treasury. There were about 12 of us in the room, the leadership from the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. And I listened as they told us, in very serious tones, that unless we did something, there would be a meltdown of the American economy and the global economy, and quickly we could face a collapse of our economy. Businesses would fail. People would lose their jobs. They would lose their savings if we didn't act. Now, that was a story told to 12 of us around a table who've heard a lot of things as politicians. But we've never heard anything like that before. And, of course, it wasn't told to us in the context of something we'd never heard or considered, with all of the problems of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns and AIG, we knew there was a problem with the economy. We didn't know it was that bad. Well, obviously, the first question is, how do we reach the crisis? Well, I think it's very reached it. We reached it with reckless deregulation of the credit industry. We stepped aside and allowed these institutions to operate without oversight, without transparency, without accountability. And greed took over. People were making millions of dollars overnight, and they pushed the government aside and said, don't get in our way. There's money to be made. And of course we made this because of the reckless behavior of those on Wall Street who took advantage of the situation and a lot of innocent people. I can recall offering amendments on this floor to stop predatory lending practices like the subprime mortgage market generated. I can recall debating the high priest of deregulation, Phil Gramm of Texas, who warned me that if Durbin's amendment would pass, it would destroy the subprime.
All Oh, well, I guess that's not going to work out so well for us, is it? There's more than one way to skin a cat. Not literally. Come on, give me a break, guys. Let's see what I think this is important to hear. And your thoughts on it, of course, are also welcome at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or, of course, on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. They're hell-bent on doing this, aren't they? Now, granted, to be fair, the market closed today. The Dow closed down 19.5 points. The NASDAQ closed down about 22.5 points. You know, that's just a day on the trading floor, isn't it? I mean, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck or anything, but that looks like pretty normal market sort of conduct. Still haven't suspended trading. And yet now it's a rescue? And we already know from last night, because God knows nobody else reported it, or not many. I don't get to listen to everything or read everything. I didn't see it anywhere else. That the Fed, screw whatever the Congress does, had already pumped $600 billion into the markets. Then lo and behold, here's another story that rolls out earlier today that I ran across. And it always seems to be the same number. Headline. Bush signs $600 billion stopgap bill. Now, this is slugged the Dateline today. U.S. President George W. Bush signs a government expenditures bill topping $600 billion after his economic relief plan fails. After Bush's banking, this is from Press TV, by the way. That's the Iranian outfit. After Bush's banking bailout scheme failed, the president endorsed a budget bill of $600 billion to fund his administration's activities for the next 6 months. Of course, you got to remember all the bombing and slaughtering and killing and massacring is off the books. So this isn't that. The story says, referring to his rejected plan to rescue Wall Street, Bush said, "I'm disappointed that the Congress passed a long-term continuing resolution. There's much work to be done, and the Congress should not adjourn for the year without finishing important business on spending, taxes, and free trade agreements." Pardon me, this isn't part of the report, but George Bush complaining about somebody going on vacation is, I don't know, it's like the Pope complaining about some other guy wearing dresses. $600 billion here, $600 billion there. You know, what's $600 billion among friends? Right? I mean, really. Yeah, I'm told via email from a listener, Ann, that Maria Cantwell is her senator. And that she is, in fact, very good. And I don't doubt that at all. Don't doubt that in the least. I just get the sense that this thing's going to be steamrollered through the Senate. I get it. I see it. Yeah, that's, okay. I see here. Yeah, that's Cindy. That's our buddy in the Great Northwest. She's on hiatus into the high mountains. And, is emailing from another email address right now. I got it now. Okay. A little Osley on the uptake, eh? Cindy. And Maria Cantwell has done pretty good things from time to time. She also notes, she said, "Remember when I told you about my uncle in the Klan? He told me they jettisoned the K in KKK and replaced it with a C. And that three C's in a row is code, just like DCCC. Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is code for conservative. Yeah, it might as well be the Democratic Conservative Campaign Committee. A place for the Klan to gather, too, on both sides. There's an RCCC, too. Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. And I'm also reminded by our buddy Marty. Don't forget Nancy Skinner. Yeah, Nancy Skinner was another one. who ran a heck of a good race that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee wouldn't touch with a 20-foot battle lance. Profoundly, yeah, because it takes a bajillion dollars to get in there now. Because you just can't knock, unless you've got some sort of massive grassroots organization that will knock on doors and phone call and do all of that for you, it's almost impossible to get into office without a few million bucks. You know, even in a, well, it's tough to run in, for instance, the district that the second congressional, you want to talk about gerrymandering, the second congressional district of West Virginia includes Kanawha County, Roane County, other central West Virginia counties, and it extends all the way up into the eastern panhandle at Martinsburg. How did just a classic case of manipulating the congressional districts, you know, based on it's population-based apportionment, but still, you know, come on. Bedroom communities in Washington, D.C. have a commonality of interest with relative flatlanders in the county north of the state capital county, Kanawha? No. And that's why grassroots efforts are so important. You know, there are good candidates running, but they're having the devil's own time getting support. I mean, can you imagine it? You know, we've been proud of Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida from time to time. She's done some of the right things. And she is, I guess she's the anointed one. She'll be the next chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee after this guy from Maryland steps aside. And she told this guy, raise a boatload of money and we'll talk to you. She's actively endorsed Ileana Ross Leighton, that really, really hateful woman from Miami. A repiglican who gets in the way, who stops the meaningful reform that can make this a better nation. Imagine that, if you dare. It's astonishing. Simply astonishing. But, you know, just another day of politics as usual. Oh, and by the way, there's another little something-something out there. Just a disgusting little moment. Headline, new ad targeting Obama features connection to Reverend Wright. Haven't we gotten over that yet? The Reverend Wright thing? I mean, didn't that sort of get neutralized with the whole Pastor Hagee and Starve and this crazy woman from Alaska getting protected by from the witches? I mean, do they really want? But no. A conservative group called Judicial Confirmation Network is launching, according to CNN, a new television ad in key battleground states today that in part features Barack Obama's ties to Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And, it's an independent ad. You know, John McHoover's people have nothing to... my friends, we can't stop them from running that scurrilous ad. We've asked them several times, and they just said that, you know, you're going to have to come and make me. And, well, you know, I'm 72 years old, and I can't get in those kind of brawls anymore. My friends, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, this whole sleazy thing, William Ayers and Tony Rezko, the whole tired, sickening, mud-slinging, filthy thing. Ugh. And meanwhile, you can't hardly get a straight answer out of John McCain. What Albert mentioned during our conversation a little bit ago, this bears playing. This was from his interview with the Des Moines Register. Yeah, but we're going to have ads about William Ayers and Reverend Jeremiah Wright, but not this.
A veteran and a member of Congress and now someone over 65, have you always been covered in your adult life by a taxpayer-financed health care plan?
I was out of the military for a while before I went to Congress, but... You know, that's a interesting statement, isn't it? And I have never been an astronaut,
President,
but I think I know the challenges
Senator
of space.
Mr. President, I just
I've
wanted
never,
to make
done
sure
a lot
that
of things
everyone.
In my life. Person who thinks that families make the best choices for themselves in their future.
Astronaut?
That's a dramatic different philosophy than my Democrat friends, in my view, who think that government is the answer. Senator Obama wants to create a huge health care bureaucracy for America.
You mean like Medicare that works?
So the answer is that most of my life in serving my country, I have had health care. I did go a period of time where the health care wasn't very good.
There it is! Oh, you just knew it!
My friends, I was a POW. I was the only one. There was nobody else. I'm the super POW. Yeah, that's me. That's me. I wasn't an astronaut? Senator? They didn't ask you if you were an astronaut. God almighty. And my Democrat friends think that government can solve all the problems. Has this old moron ever read the Constitution of the United States? You know, that little pamphlet that begins with the words, "We the people of the United States." You know, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Yeah, all that, you know, the cheap thing, to provide for the general welfare, yada, 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 yada. Has he ever read that? Because, you know, that's the document that sort of sets up the very framework of our government, and it establishes, even though Justice the Fat Tony Scalia says that the preamble isn't really law, that document says that the government is and shall be made up by the people of the United States, who are creating a representative, a republic based on principles of representative democracy. Right? So when he says that Democrats want a government, no, dummy! We want health care to be taken care of by we, the people of the United States, not they, the people of AIG. All right? Lord, yeah, okay, now this, granted, this is life insurance and it's not health insurance, but this is indicative. This is how the insurance companies work. This is how the fraud, the fakes, the phonies, this is how it all shakes out. You remember Heath Ledger, right? Young movie star with oodles of talent and a bright future in front of him. Based on the exhaustion that he experienced shooting that most recent Batman movie. Man, what a thing to give your life for. Batman. Sheesh. He took the wrong pills at the wrong time and it killed him, right? Remember? And there was all that business in the tabloid. Where were the Olsen twins? Where were they? Right? And there was an investigation, and it was conclusively ruled out that no, Heath Ledger, 29 years old, with his entire life in front of him, and a future that meant that probably included making more money than he would ever be able to count, that no, he didn't off himself with a handful of pills. He didn't get all... No. And he had a life insurance policy for some several millions of dollars. And it was not through AIG, but through ING. Which, interestingly, is going through some tough times. And the lawyer who was the appointed representative of Heath Ledger's estate via his will has recently had to file suit against the company owned by ING just to try to get ING to pay up what they damned well know they damned well owe to the estate of Heath Ledger. Namely, the insurance policy proceeds. We're investigating to see if perhaps Heath Ledger committed suicide.
Because, you know, there's a suicide clause in the policy that says if he commits suicide, we don't have to pay anything back but the premiums. That's what we have to see. And do you have any idea what actually having to pay out $10 million of cash would do? It's about all the money we got around here.
What a load.
And my Democrat friends say that they think government can solve all the problems.
John McCain, you old horse's rear end.
I know, you were a POW. Yeah, I got the memo. Do you realize that government-run health care, a la Medicare,
do you realize that it is far more administratively efficient and costs a lot less to administer than anything offered by your for-profit illness industry buddies? I mean, just asking. That was a brilliant, brilliant question that they asked at the editorial board of the Des Moines Register. Throughout your adult life, am I right, as a veteran and a member of Congress and now someone over 65, throughout your adult life, have you been covered by a taxpayer-financed health care plan? Yes or no? Yes or no? This is the guy who wants to be the leader of the free world. He's no more capable of giving a straight answer on the stand than a mobster. I mean, come on.
Throughout your adult life, am I right, as a veteran and a member of Congress and now someone over 65, have you always been covered in your adult life by a taxpayer-financed health care plan?
Yes.
I was out of the military for a while before I went to Congress, but... You know, that's an interesting statement, isn't it? And I have never been an astronaut, but I think I know the challenges of space, and I've never done a lot of things in my life that I think I am familiar with. I have always been a free...
Yeah, he's never been an astronaut, but he knows the challenges of space. That's because inside his head's a freaking vacuum! Yeah, there I go being mean again. But merciful God. Can straight answer, please? This kind of makes me, yeah, Albert's he's a sleazy bastard, ain't he? Yeah, he's real sleazy. And, you know, the nerve of him. I've never been an astronaut, but I understand the challenges of space. Well, that's kind of hand in... I don't know, somebody came up with that as a talking point because that's right there, hand in hand, with, I can see Russia from my house, therefore I'm a foreign policy expert. Is there any end to the diminished expectations which the people of the United States, you know, we the people of the United States, are expected to swallow in order to put this old freak, this old fraud into office? I mean, because, really, McCain, Palin, diminished expectations. Isn't that the at this point, isn't that the campaign slogan? I'm tempted to run it, but I'm not going to run it. Some of the stuff from the Pterodactyl's interview with Cutesy Couric. It's insanity. What newspapers do you read? What magazines do you read? I read a lot of them. My youngest, she brings home my weekly reader all the time, and you know, half the time she helps me with the crossword. But she's a smart one, that little, the one I named after the witch is. No, let's see, what did I name? Yeah, Piper. No, I didn't name her after a witch. I named her after one of those Piper cubs with the skis on the bottom that we hunt the wolves and chop off their forelegs. Yeah, no, Willow and Piper. You know, one's just named after a tree and one's named after an airplane we use to slaughter wolves. They're not really named after witches on TV show because, you know, Pastor Muthy has already come to my church and he told me we couldn't have anything to do with those witches, so I can promise you, America, that there won't be any witches in Washington with me. Next question. Now, to be fair, I'm not going to be on the air tomorrow night. It's Thursday, and that means it's football with the boy. But let me be honest with you. It's a bye week, so there won't be any football game tomorrow night. But we do have a preliminary meeting with regard to the mountain blessing that's coming up on Sunday up on Golly Mountain here near where I live. And if you recall the last time we were there, those advocates of clean coal, all in their little matching T-shirts the company made them wear, came up and screamed at a priest. Yeah, really, no kidding. Screamed at a priest. Right smack dab in the middle of the service. Screamed at a priest. So that's going on Sunday, so we're having a little bit of a planning meeting. I'm just a little fly on the wall for that stuff. We're going to be there. And it's my understanding that there may be some horn listeners there as well. You know, if you're within driving distance, come on. You know what we need? We need more people on our side at this mountain blessing so that just in case the little weirdos come around the bend, because see, there was no negative press coverage for them, the mountaintop removal weirdos. There was no negative press coverage for them. There were no negative consequences for their literal, you know, common law assault of a bunch of middle-aged peaceniks. No, there was no negative coverage, so they'll probably do it again. You know what would be fun? Last time, they tried to surround us. It would be fun to have about 500 supporters of real social justice, real environmental justice, people who understand what it means when we talk about externalizing the cost of coal into society and what we want in terms of actually making the companies internalize the cost of coal into their companies and not into the society. It'd be nice if we had enough people to surround them. Now, I don't want to scare anybody or anything. We could pray with them. We could sing with them. But they have got to learn that they're riding dinosaurs. Hell, most of them think that the dinosaurs died out, that Thomas Jefferson rode from Monticello to Philadelphia on one in the first place. But they've got to learn. So, you know, Sunday, 3 p.m., Fayette County, Anstead, West Virginia, up the holler, there will be signs. Feel free to come and stand with a bunch of dedicated, peaceful, nonviolent activists who are trying to show a community that it doesn't have to be slaughtered in the name of holy prophet. My Muslim friends, no, not that holy prophet. Holy profit. For that is what the coal industry, which, incidentally, as I mentioned last night, is owned by the oil industry, worships. So I won't be on the air tomorrow night. And I will get home, and I will watch. I don't know if we should really. How can we call this a debate? This doesn't strike me as being a debate. It's not a pageant like it was back during the primaries. You know, what kind of underwear do you favor? Senator Clinton, diamonds or pearls? No, this is going to, I don't know, where Sarah Palin's concerned, this is going to be a little bit like watching the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon, isn't it? And I mean no disrespect, but she's profoundly challenged. Sarah Palin is more challenged than our friends in the audience who have physical challenges. This woman can get up and walk, but whatever is between her ears is just ooey and gooey and nasty and spidery and it's got ants in it. You know, there's an organization out there. I think Bart Kopp referred to them earlier today. They're completely nuts. You know, Hockey Moms for Palin. And they're encouraging people to participate in Special Olympics or something like that. These morons don't even realize that that stupid, hateful woman cut the budget by, what, half for Special Olympics Alaska? Yeah, I know. I know. Let's check out a little bit more of the debate and see what's cooking. If we can make it go.
What made this dreadful crash all the more tragic was that it might have been avoided had the necessary investments in technology been made. And as we mourn the
victims talking about the train collision in California
crash, our vote today will demonstrate the seriousness of our being here about making sure that this can't happen again. The state of South Carolina, for instance, not very long ago in Graniteville, we saw a rail catastrophe shown here. In 2005, this collision resulted in the release of chlorine gas that killed 9 people and over 5,400 people were evacuated from the surroundings that day. In Luther, Oklahoma, in August, the community witnessed this massive fireball, you see, after a train derailed and caused these ethanol tank cars to explode. You can't even see the train here because it was so engulfed by flames. Mr. President, one of the major reasons for train crashes is human error. Our bill addresses that problem with vital improvements. And thanks in part to Senators Feinstein and Boxer, our bill mandates that major railroads use positive train control, or PTC, system. This technology is available today to keep two trains from colliding, to stop a train if the train is passing a red light, as we saw in Chatsworth. Secondly, our legislation limits the daily number of work hours for railroad employees. Laws now allow them to work 100 hours each and every week.
Wow, this bill may actually be a poison pill. If they're going to put that, if it's loaded down with railroad legislation, or maybe these are privileged remarks, we're just going to have to listen and see here for a minute. I'm sorry. Sometimes it's nice just to check out what's going on. You know, this slow, stentorian speech. This may be a respectable senator. I don't recommend recognize him by his face, but I can't help but be reminded that Senate and senile come from the same root Latin word, you know?
$100,000 when railroad companies disobey our safety laws. Mr. President, as I mentioned on Monday, this bill is long overdue. Since we last passed rail safety legislation in 1994, more than 9,000 people have been killed, and more than 100,000 have been injured in train-related incidents. Since we last passed Amtrak legislation in 1997, gas prices have tripled, congestion has grown substantially on the highways, we've suffered two of the worst years ever for flight delays. And everyone knows it's time to modernize our nation's underfunded and outdated passenger rail system. In doing so, we'll have
sounds like he's saying the right stuff.
Many of today's challenges, like energy independence, overcrowded highways, runways that are overcrowded, and global warming. And to prevent tragedies like the Chatsworth crash from ever happening again, we must complete this bipartisan legislation today and send it to the President for his signature. The Senate's already passed our bills on Amtrak and railroad safety with overwhelming majorities. On this past Monday, 69 of us voted for cloture for this package, obviously meaning that debate was to be cut off and get on with the business. And I urge my colleagues to finish the job and support this landmark legislation for the sake of America's travelers. Now, I want to take a minute. Mr. President, how much time do we have on our side?
7.5 minutes.
Mr. President, I want to thank some of my colleagues for their vital support for this critical legislation. This is truly a bipartisan bill, and I want to take a minute and thank those who worked so hard to put this package together. First and foremost, Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid for his leadership. And, Mr. President, I want to be reminded when there's 3 minutes to go, because I want the senator from California, Senator Feinstein, to be able to speak. I also want to say thank you to a former senator, Senator Trent Lott, for his hard work and longstanding commitment to passenger rail service. From the Commerce Committee, our
I'm beginning to think I'm losing my mind or something.
Ranking members,
I mean, it's the chambers of the Senate and everything. Does the Senate do reruns?
And I thank her for her cooperation. It's been terrific.
This is a little bit... I was looking for a little... I'm sorry. I hope I haven't bored you.
Ranking member, Senator Smith. And all of our co-sponsors, particularly Senators Carper,
I was looking for a discussion of the bailout bill.
For their dedication and commitment to improving travel in America. And our
maybe this is... All right, but maybe I've got the wrong thing. This is... strange. I don't... Well, and it's a little bit diverting, too. But I was curious about this and just couldn't resist checking in. I'm going to check another source and see if they're doing the same thing. I know. This is probably not the most... Look, anytime you're watching the Senatus, it... Yeah, that's Frank Lautenberg. Okay, yeah. I heard him earlier recognizing people for time. He said, how much time do I have and stuff like that? Shame on me. Haven't read the bill. You caught me. I didn't do my homework on it. There's transportation and railroad. I mean, granted, there's infrastructure stuff that needs to be addressed, no doubt about it. This just seems a little bit, shall we say, odd. And I guess that's Dianne Feinstein standing up now. Oh, this is just weird. This is just altogether strange. So, yeah, enough of that, I guess. Here, let's make sure that audio doesn't sneak back into the process. Maybe they'll actually. I don't know. Are they bored? Is it just going to happen? Are we being presented with an otherwise done deal? Is this thing just going to pass one way or the other? How many of you called your senators today saying no bailout or saying yes bailout? I mean, that's what conversation radio is about. That's what the discussion's all about. Did you call your senator? Senators? Did you express your opinion on this? Or are we down to the point where we're just saying, it's done. Fix is in. It's boat race. Is that where we are? I don't know. So apparently this evening was the last, the latest installment of the Palin tapes on CBS. You know, we talk a lot about the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS, as it's properly referred to. We talk a lot about the Supreme Court from time to time here on this program. And if I'm to gauge the responses from y'all, you are pretty savvy where the Supreme Court is concerned. Well, guess what? We have further evidence that this entire audience is far more qualified than Mussolini to be the vice president of the United States. You just can't not hear this. I'm sorry.
Why, in your view, is Roe v. Wade a bad decision?
I think it should be a state's issue, not federal government mandating yes or no on such an important issue. I'm in that sense a federalist, where I believe that states should have more say in the laws of their lands and individual areas.
Hey, dummy! You states writer, you! Where were you when the states' rights of the voters in Florida were trampled? What was your opinion on Bush v. Gore?
Now, foundationally also, though, it's no secret that I'm pro-life, that I believe that a culture of life is very important for this country. And
does that include a culture of life that bombs numerous weddings in Afghanistan, or does that not qualify as life there, the Caribou Barbie? Just ask it.
Personally, that's what I would like to see further embraced by America.
Do you think there's an inherent right to privacy?
Yeah, as long as it's not, you know, the life of brown people who don't speak English. Just saying. Oh, here comes the million-dollar question. Oh, this is going to be too fun. I can't wait.
I would like to see further embraced by America.
Do you think there's an inherent right to privacy in the Constitution?
I do.
She does? Well, she better, by God. She referenced it when she proudly trotted out her knocked-up little daughter and then said that she expects America to respect their privacy.
Yeah,
that's
I do.
The cornerstone of Roe versus Wade.
I do, and I believe that individual states can best handle what the people within the different constituencies in the 50 states would...
So she believes, let's see, I don't know, let's be fair, let's go back just a little bit, let's give her a chance. She believes in a right to privacy that's enshrined by constitutional interpretation by the Supreme Court, but if I have this right, she believes that that federal right to privacy should be left up to the states to interpret and enforce? Am I there? Is that what she's... Ouch! My head hurts.
...down of Roe versus Wade?
I do, and I believe that individual states can best handle what the people within the different constituencies in the 50 states would like to see their will ushered in an issue.
So the right to... Wait. Whoa, my eyeballs are all, it's gone from the center of my head to my eyeballs are aching. She believes in a right to privacy, but that right to privacy may be different for people in Alaska who have pregnant 17-year-old daughters who were knocked up by a local drunk ne'er-do-well hockey dude who will F you up if you cross him. That right to privacy is different than the right to privacy that it confers upon a woman of color in, say, I don't know, Mississippi or the Chicago or New York, the right to see to the well-being of her own insides. Right? Is that it?
Do you like that?
What other Supreme Court decisions do you disagree with?
Depends on what you mean by Supreme Court decision, cutesy.
Well, let's see. There's, of course, in the great history of America, there have been rulings that there's never going to be absolute consensus by every American. And
huh? Oh, my IQ is sinking. We may have to end the program prematurely if I don't get some relief here. It's, you know, it's like asking John McCain, have you been on the federal health care teat all your miserable life? Easy question. Either you were or you weren't. I mean, if the answer is no, because there was a time when you were without health care, you know, I don't know, maybe the 6 months between you ditching your first wife and, or the 6 weeks between ditching your first wife and marrying the, what did he call her? A trollop? Yeah, marrying the beer heiress Trollop, then the answer is no. But it's an easy question. And so is this one. Can you think of another case with which you disagree? I mean, you hate Roe v. Wade, so just bust right out there, Pterodactyl, and tell them how much you hate Griswold versus Connecticut. Tell them how you disagree with Bowers v. Hardwick. Or maybe you're not so crazy about
the Dred Scott decision. Maybe Plessy versus Ferguson was an affront to your sense of, or maybe you think Plessy versus Ferguson, that would be agreeing. Not, see, you can't say Plessy versus Ferguson because you agree with Plessy versus Ferguson that separate but equal is all right. Maybe you don't disagree. Maybe that's, you know, this is that, okay, maybe we're having a little epiphany here on prayer meeting night. Maybe that's the thing. Cutesy Couric asked her to name Supreme Court decisions with which she disagrees. Now, if you're normal, rational, non-racist, unbigoted, you say, well, hell yeah, Dred Scott, worst decision in the history of the court. Plessy versus Ferguson just stinks to high heaven. But if you're a right-wing repig-licking, in the still and dark secret of your soul, you know that you agree. That you agree with the Dred Scott decision. That said people with darker skin color were the physical property of people with light skin color. You agree with Plessy versus Ferguson's holding that it's okay to essentially deny civil rights to an entire segment of the populace. You agree with that. So, you don't want Pastor Muthy to come around and cast the witches out of you for lying on national TV or nothing. That's the thing. That's the epiphany thing here. This is not proof that she doesn't know any other Supreme Court cases. This is evidence that some of the worst Supreme Court cases in the history of this once great republic, she agrees with. And that is a big, big difference. Listen again.
Well, let's see. There's, of course, in the great history of America, there have been rulings that there's never going to be absolute consensus by every American. And there are those issues, again, like Roe v. Wade, where I believe are best held on a state level and addressed there. So, going through the history of America, there would be others, but...
Can you think of any?
Well, I would think of any, again, that could best be dealt with on a more local level. Maybe I would take issue with, but, as a mayor and then as a governor and even as a vice president, if I'm so privileged to serve, wouldn't be in a position of changing those things, but in supporting the law of the land as it reads today.
'Twas Brillig in the slithy tove, did Geyer and Gimble in the wave, all mimsy with the Moorgroves and the Balmraps outgraved. Snicker snack! And see, that's the thing about Dred Scott. If I recall my constitutional history correctly, Dred Scott, as a young man, had been a slave in Florence, Alabama, at a hotel there. Eventually, he found his way to a free state. And he argued that he was, by virtue of being in a free state, a free man. Never mind the complicated argument that he was a human being just like the white human beings. But he'd gotten home free, as it were. And he no longer had to call anybody master. And the Supreme Court, led by Justice Taney, said, nope, you're still a slave. Get back at it. And if you give the master any lip, he's liable to put you out there chopping cotton, son, and you won't be, and because he was a full-grown man. He wasn't a child. But he had... At that point in time, in the middle of the 19th century, the hellish misfortune of being born in the United States of America with an excess of melanin in his dermal system.
And she wants to make sure, because remember, she wants everything decided on the low.
I should be decided on the local level?
Well, that's kind of Dred Scotty, isn't it? If the locals say you're a slave, by God, you're a slave. And we don't need any federal intervention. We don't need any judicial activism. No. Please, America, don't do this to us. Please. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Philip.
Hey, Philip, how are you?
Oh, hanging in there, getting ready for the debate tomorrow night with Moosehead there and Biden. She's unbelievable, isn't she? What's more unbelievable are the people that want to defend her, want to vote for her, because, well, she's good-looking. She's a good mom. She's
and she hasn't got, and, she, and there's no witches.
Oh, yeah, don't forget. Like, you do think that witches and queers and other scary
now,
things.
Now, don't be mean to her about the gay people, Philip. She has a gay friend. She told us that.
I had a rant on my program about that today. You know, being a gay person, you know, I get tired of hearing people make that excuse who are homophobic or belong to one of these freaky bastard churches saying, well, I've got a gay friend and that makes me gay friendly.
How do they know? I mean, that at the top of the program, Philip, I told the story of young Michael Handman.
Who had
the snot beaten out of him because people could tell that he was Jewish by virtue of the fact that he insisted on following his faith's requirement or his interpretation of his faith's requirement that he wear a yarmulke. How do you know that you've got a gay friend? I mean, is there a tattoo? I mean, what?
Well, maybe she came out to him, you know. And some people in the gay community, I'm not like that. Sparky's not like that here either. We're not your stereotypical ones. In every race, there's stereotypical people. And black America, gays, you know, run around and act gay and overdo it. So, yeah, that's how you can tell. But for the most part, you can't. But her friend probably came out to her. But what gets me is she said that this was a choice her friend made, not a choice she would make. And science, most people in science will tell you it's not a choice people make. And if you think about it logically, you know, what gay person, what gay kid that's like 12 years old hitting puberty is going to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to choose to be gay, and when I go to school, I'm going to get bashed, and I'll get beat up, and I'll be called faggot. And
I might get murdered, you know, right.
You know, who's going to choose that?
What? You'd have to be nuts. I mean, you would have to be profound. No, that's not a choice. You know, when did the Ceratodactyl choose to be straight?
Well, yeah, they never can answer that. You
or,
know, when did you make that choice? Oh, well, I just knew I like girls or boys. It's infuriating, you know, and the fact that these people still to this day, a bunch of people, and mind you, these are all white people. If you watch any McCain speech or Palin speech, what you'll see is a sea of white people. And they'll pluck in one person of color, like standing behind McCain or Palin, just to make it look good. But there's a code word with these people, too. If you heard some of the people after the debate last week between McCain and between Obama, some of them were saying, well, John McCain came off more presidential. Yeah, to me, when I see a white person saying that, that
means he came off more white.
Well, he was white. See, our presidents have to be white. It won't work if we got a black guy on the dollar bill. And bigotry is alive in America, and it stems right from religion, right from organized religion, whether it's Christianity. And these freaks from her church, Wasilla, whatever church, Wasilla Church of the Moose,
yeah,
all of a sudden doesn't belong to, Islamic freaky bastards, or even Jewish freaky bastards, you know? Any of these organized religions.
Fundamentalists. Yeah. It's not a religion problem. It's a fundamentalism problem, Philip. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a dumb bastard problem, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned something there, Philip. Let me just ask. You said, you know, they've got, and I hate using the phrase, but it is what it is. They have a token person of color standing in the crowd behind John McCain. And I've seen it, too. And this is kind of a smart-ass thing, but it's a legitimate question. Does this now mean that they're going to have some guy standing behind him singing show tunes, too?
Maybe. Or somebody in drag.
You know, the drag queens from McCain Palin. It's making me crazy. And the thing, I'm so ashamed of the for-profit media because, you know, this was a direct quote that she made in talking with Cutesy Couric. She said, she is one of my best friends who happens to have made a choice that isn't a choice that I have made. Well, Cutesy Couric should then because that's the door going wide open, you know, the closet door. And okay, that's fine. That's not a choice that you made. When did you choose to be straight, Sarah? Do you have to choose to be straight every day? Does a gay person have to choose to be gay every day?
Well, of course, she gives some dumbass answer like she does when she avoids the question or doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, of course, in the history of our great nation, there have been many people who were in the history of our nation, and it was great. And
I just sent you a little commercial ad for Sarah Palin, which really describes why a lot of men are going to vote for Sarah Palin.
Oh, well, then by, is it safe to run?
Oh, yeah, it's a sound bite off of YouTube.
Okay, well, then, for heaven's sakes, let's run this together, and we'll listen to it together, okay?
Okay.
All right, stand by. It's loading.
Slightly nerdy, but...
Okay, little Timmy, little Susie, out of the room.
Every election year, it seems we are forced to choose between two candidates who are essentially the same. But this year, there's one candidate who brings something new to the race.
I just masturbated to Sarah Palin.
Oh, my God.
All across America, people are doing it.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
And I'm masturbating to her right now.
Man, not in my car.
Finally, a candidate we can masturbate to. She's smart, she's spunky, and she is...
No, not that word!
I'm going to vote for Sarah Palin because she's a hunter.
I'm voting for Sarah Palin because she wants control of my vagina.
I'm voting for her because she shoots guns.
I'm voting for her because she's kind of cute and I think she has a fat ass.
And that's why she should be our next vice president.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
I masturbated to Sarah Palin.
No, we masturbated to Sarah Palin.
Together. That's awesome.
This November, be sure to stop masturbating long enough to vote for Sarah Palin and that old dude. I'm John McCain, and I masturbated to Sarah Palin. And I approve his message.
If you think about it, you know...
You're a bad person, Philip Rockwell. You realize that, right?
Well, it's serious, though. You know, the people that I've talked to that said, well, yeah, I like Sarah Palin. She's cute. They can't give me a good reason why she's qualified to be vice president or, God forbid, president. Yeah, if this old bastard Lumpy keels over from his cancer...
Oh, I know.
And it's the truth. Sometimes, you know, you got to get a little saucy to get to the truth, and that's really
and there
the truth.
Is, there is. I mean, I'm kidding with you, Philip, but there's truth in that. Every last one of these things, you know, she won a beauty pageant once. What does that mean? What does it mean that the YouTube video of Sarah Palin's turn in her swimsuit oodles of years ago is getting all kinds of hits? I mean, I'm ashamed of myself. I've seen it. It's just, I'm so ashamed.
It's just unbelievable, though, considering the magnitude of everything that's happening right now between this 9/11 economic crisis in America, to the way things are with the economy, to what's happening in the Southeast with the gas shortage, and still people are going to vote for McCain and Palin, even despite all that, against their best interest. And these are the dumb bastards in America. You know, I heard one after the debate, like I said, saying, well, McCain was more presidential and more prepared, and Barack Obama stuttered. Why don't you people just come out and say you're bigots? You don't want a black guy as president, period.
Right, exactly.
And you want this religious freak, because you're holding on to that hope that you'll keep the queens from marrying and get rid of abortion. Period. I don't give a damn what she says with cutesy jerk. It's opposite of what her platform is, and it's opposite of what
that freaky
witch doctor has to say. Yeah, I'm sick of these dumb bastards in America. Get the hell out of my country.
Stay away from the voting booth. Just, you know, do something. I don't know, speak in tongues or something for a day. Just stay
on. I love that, too. Remember, God told me to tell you to go piss off, you idiots. See, I'm talking in tongues now.
Yep. Himalas. Himalas, the big, big, the light, big, boo. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
or I don't know. Under the circumstances.
We're making fun of that, but.
Under the circumstances, ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, willa, walla, bing, bang. Hey, I'm speaking in tongues.
You know, and I want to ask you a question, too. I didn't know the answer to this today when I cut my show. But do airline pilots have to go through psychological exams, too?
Airline pilots?
Yeah.
You're darn straight.
Okay, well.
Or at least here they do. I mean, do you remember? There was that 747 Egypt Airlines, whatever, that went down. At least the reason they gave was because he decided he was on a mission from Allah. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Crazy, crazy. Well, you know, if we give airline pilots justifiably psychiatric examinations, how come we don't have a psychiatric examination of a presidential candidate and a vice presidential?
Well, I mean, because all them psychiatrists is liberal.
Oh, yeah, just like the liberal media. You know, Newt Gingrich was saying that Katie Kirk was the enemy. And
oh, I know, and now the McCain campaign's after Gwen Ifill.
Oh, yeah, because she wrote that book.
She wrote a book about African Americans in politics from the civil rights era forward, and the McCain campaign is all bent out of shape and all twisted up because it's got a chapter on Barack Obama.
Ooh.
You know, because...
Who do they want there? Sean Hannity? Bill O'Reilly?
No, let's see. J.C. Watts. Yeah, he was in politics. Yeah, remember the Republican congressman from Oklahoma whose daddy the preacher said, me voting for my son would be like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders?
Yes.
Yeah, and see, you don't have to put Obama in that old book. You could put J.C. Watts in there. Well, he's a great American. But yeah, they're having a hissy about Gwen Ifill because she's going to moderate the vice president. And but you see what this is, right, Philip? This is the setup. This is the con. This is where of course people think that Sarah Palin lost the debate. It's not because she's dumber than homemade stupid. It's because that nasty liberal Gwen Ifill. Well, she's in the tank. That's the phrase they use on Fox now. I don't know if you've noticed that, Phil. She's in the tank for Obama. I mean, I saw her at an Obama rally one time. She threw her panties at him. She did. I saw it.
Yeah, she's got a tattoo of Obama on her butt. But that's the talking point now. That's the RNC talking point on
this.
Liberal media, we're going to see what they're saying is we're going to see a different debate from what we see in what the liberal media sees. Liberal media being hard on poor Sarah Palin. Now she's a goddamn idiot. Period. She's an idiot. She's a freak. Okay? Anybody that gets blessed by some freak, okay, saying, we're going to keep them safe and witches. Oh, and by the way, Jesus, let's get Sarah Palin some money, too. She needs money for the campaign in Jesus' name. Jesus, by the way, who didn't like money and threw money changers out of the temple.
Yeah, there's that, isn't there?
I mean, come on. So that's what they're planting in the dumbed-down Americans' heads.
And see, there's so much going back to this business with her talking about being gay as a choice. The word code was mentioned earlier in the program, Philip.
Right.
And that's code, too, because remember, this woman is a fundamentalist. I mean, she was raised in a tongue speaking, floor rolling, strychnine drinking, snake handling church. Okay. And as such, she believes in miraculous healing. She thinks, by definition, because being gay is a choice, that you can be healed of being having a bad dose of the gay.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, Wasilla Baptist Church or Moose Church or whatever it is has been advertising as well. And Katie Couric asked her about that at one point, I believe, about conversion therapy, these lovely little camps where not only is it...
Yeah, sexual concentration camps run by the fundamentalist industry, yeah.
Where teenagers are, families will send their gay kid there to have their mind twisted, and all of this is really a shame-based thing. So all this has to do with hate. Whether it's hating the black guy, whether it's hating the gay guy, whether it has to do with hating the Jewish guy in the military, it's all about hate. It's about time America says enough of that. Because we've been conditioned, Bob, to hate.
Well, you want a classic example of that, Philip? This thing that went down in Dayton. Did you read about it? Where a church, a mosque in Dayton, got gassed during its Ramadan feast. Oh, this is disgusting. A little girl came out of the room where the children were. And she was complaining of her eyes burning and feeling sick. And then other people in the church began having to leave, and they had to be treated for toxic exposure and have their eyes rinsed and stuff like that. Now, the little girl was 10 years old, okay? The Dayton cops have found a can of pepper spray near the mosque. Other people were removed from the mosque as well during their Ramadan celebration. The little girl saw two men standing outside a basement window of the mosque about 9:40 p.m. on September 26th. And one of those men sprayed something through the open window into the girl's face from a white can with a red top. And the little girl said her face immediately began burning and that she felt sick at her stomach. Then other children felt effects, and a woman in the room felt the effects. All right, we've got all this now. She was pepper sprayed. There was a chemical weapon of mass destruction attack on a mosque in Dayton, Ohio. All right? That's all just established fact.
But see, that's okay.
Now, wait. Punchline coming. Okay. Punchline coming.
Oh, more.
The Dayton police have announced that there is no evidence of a hate crime at that mosque.
Well, isn't that special? No, because they're Muslim, they're terrorists, and see,
nobody screamed "Die Haji" or nothing. They, that could have been any kid. They was just out to pepper spray somebody in the basement in the face, and that was the basement they found. Mm-hmm.
But if that had happened at a Christian church,
oh, they're persecuting the Christians.
Exactly. So we've been conditioned in America over the last 8 years since 9/11 to believe that anything Islamic is a terrorist. Anything Muslim is a terrorist. Look at how they equate Hamas with terrorist, which was
that's another one of those Sarah Palin moments. Yeah.
It was an elected party. And we've been conditioned to believe that we still want to hang on to that belief that America and Israel are these noble countries that do noble, wonderful things, we never do terrible things to other countries like the Palestinians or like what we did in Iraq. And we've been conditioned to look at everything.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of doing terrible things to people in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know if you caught this today, but I was wandering around a little bit, Philip, and guess what? In the middle of this financial crisis when nobody's getting any credit
and we're all just going down the tubes, and we're just on greased rails straight to hell in a handcar? General Electric, everybody's favorite bomb manufacturer, is having a stock sale. They're raising money. Remember, there's no credit and there's no money? They're raising money, Philip. Because, you know, there's always going to be a market for blowing up brown people.
Oh, yeah, war makes a lot of money. But like I said, you know, we're conditioned to believe that everything Muslim is a terrorist now. And isn't this the same thing that Hitler did with the Jews in the 1930s, where he started spreading the propaganda about the Jews being the problem? They caused the economic crisis in Germany. They were, you know, an alien race, and they're the whole problem. They supported the Social Democrats there. You know, we're seeing the same thing play out here in America. The only difference is it's not Jewish people, per se. It's Islamic people and Muslims.
It's Muslims. No, it's Jews, too. I mean, we got the story in evidence from earlier this evening. Those Christian soldiers at Fort Benning that just about stomped the life out of Michael Handman. It's Muslims. Well, it's Jews. It's atheists. It's free thinkers. It's everybody who has any degree of support for those people, because that all falls under the general heading, the broad philosophical heading of the other, because that's the Repiglican philosophy. If you can look down at your skin and determine what color it is, then you can determine therefrom what's wrong with America. And it's everybody whose skin doesn't look like yours, the others. It's everybody who has sex differently from you, the others. It's you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's insane. Now, luckily, there's good news today about the Obama campaign. It looks like he's doing well in Ohio and in Florida, according to a poll over the weekend. So I think
he's even taken a lead in North Carolina. Our buddy David from South Carolina wrote in and pointed that out to me. This is stunning. As of September 28th and 29th, from public policy polling, Obama 47%, McCain 45%, Bob Barr. Come on, Bob Barr. Republicans, you really want to vote for Bob Barr in North Carolina. So he's got 2% on, and I'm sure that's within the margin of error, but he's got 2% on McCain in North Carolina, according to that poll. According to Rasmussen on September the 23rd, he had 2% on McCain then. That's North Carolina. And they do not include the young. These polls don't include cell phone only voters. Even in South Carolina, David says Obama is within 6%. Here in West Virginia, Philip, Obama is within 4 percentage points of John McAncient.
So hopefully, you know, that will look good. But there's a new thing also out on CBS News. It says a new study details massive voter roll purges underway.
Yes.
And that's happening in at least 19 states. So yeah, I encourage everybody, we absentee vote. I don't use those damn Diebold machines.
I don't blame you. I don't.
We do an absentee vote here. But, you know, that's going to rear its head in this election, too. Now, I'm wondering, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm wondering if we're going to have the election after all this. Because there was a report that I didn't confirm. The person that posted it never emailed me back, but it said that the Russian finance ministry had gotten a notice from the British finance minister from the Federal Reserve that Bush was intending on suspending the elections the week of October 5th because of the and declaring an economic crisis. And this came out before all this $700 billion bailout thing.
I wouldn't put it past him, but he wouldn't dare. Do you think, Philip, he wouldn't dare?
Well, he's done a lot, okay? These people, you look at it this way, too. In the back of my mind, you know, they have amassed all this power, wrote Executive Order 51, have collected all this power, all these signing statements, all the tweaking and ripping apart of the Constitution. I just don't see these people saying, well, congratulations, Barack Obama. Good luck restoring democracy. Or good luck, Palin and McCain. Hope you don't die of cancer. I just don't see them doing that. So in the back of my mind, you know, I have that. There's nothing definitive about that. I have no proof of that. I couldn't find a source for that. But still, You know, keep that in mind, everyone.
Well, sure, and keep it in mind.
It's within the realm of possibility.
Keep it in the back of your mind, along with the fact that these NORTHCOM exercises have begun with a standing military presence inside the United States.
Right, that brigade from the Army or the Marine?
Yeah, this dateline is Fort Stewart, Georgia, from Army.mil News. It follows Operation Vibrant Response, a week-long command post exercise designed to train the commanders and staff of the nation's dedicated force for responding to chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high-yield explosive incidents, or CBRNE incidents. Yeah, this is creepy.
It's a unit that's designed to take care of.
Yeah, this ain't private.
Rioting.
Yeah, this ain't Private Pyle in the war games hollering hooty hoot, hooty hoot. No, this ain't that. Not at all. Philip, tell folks when and how they can hear you.
Well, you just got to go to my blog. It's at PRACUEL.livejournal.com, PRACUEL.livejournal.com.
Okay, and it's there for downloading and so forth?
Right, right. You just click on the link where it says the show is, and it goes to another page that's on ForShare. It's a ForShare page,
uh-huh,
which is where I upload the program, and today I talk more about Sarah Palin. I did something on Saturday, too, kind of a response to the debate between Obama and McCain, especially with the foreign policy stuff, with the saber-rattling at Iran and Ahmadinejad, the lying about Russia and Georgia and what happened with that. I did a response to that as well. And on there, I don't know if everybody has seen it, but there's also a link on that day's blog. It would have been Saturday the 27th. To a film about what we actually did in Fallujah, the fact that we used white phosphorus, and the fact that I'm getting really sick and tired of hearing about how much of a threat Ahmadinejad is, and this one and that one from both candidates, not just the Republican, but both candidates, when we, considering everything that we've done and allowed to be done in our name.
Ahmadinejad has not only never fired a shot at us, they've never put a bullet in a gun.
And what kills
the Persians? The Persians have not crossed their own border in 700 years.
Yeah, exactly. And what gets me about that is the fact that we're getting the same exact fear mongering that we got before we went into Iraq. The same exact thing. It's the same. You know, weapons of mass destruction. He might get nuclear weapons. He's going to hurt us. He says he wants to blow Israel off the map. Well, how many times have we alluded to the fact that we want to blow Iran off the map, number one? Number two, Iran just saw what we've done the last 6 years to Iraq. We blew the piss out of it. We shock and awed it. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned this on my program as well. You know, that was an act of terrorism. If you look up the word terror, if you look up terrorism and what the word actually means, what we did when we went in and shocked and awed Baghdad to the civilians that lived in that city,
yeah, it was terrorism.
Was an act of terrorism.
Yeah, because they weren't military targets. When you're attacking neighborhoods, no, that's not a military target. Oh, and one last thing before you go, because I don't know if you've seen this, but this came in from our listener, Maura, and this being prayer meeting and everything, I got to wedge this in, Philip. Headline, yeah. Fundamentalists blame Wall Street's woes on gays. Christian?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, we did that.
Yeah, did y'all do that?
Yeah, sorry about that.
During the time that his show was going, I listened to Peter Godbold, and he was telling me that, y'all are capable of earthquakes and volcanoes, and now you can tank a market?
Oh, yeah. Well, we do that in between, like, ruining marriages.
Right. I mean, is there something, is it like if you play show tunes backwards? I mean, is there some sort of financial death ray that comes out? I love this thing. Christian fundamentalists are suggesting gays and lesbians are to blame for Wall Street's woes. In the September 25th blog post titled "The Nation Will Write Itself If It Fixes Sex," Christian Civil League of Maine executive director Michael Heath. Wait a minute. What was Sarah Palin's maiden name? Heath, that's right. Writes that the financial crisis facing Wall Street is a symptom of America's sinful sexual culture, including the acceptance of gay unions. I didn't know there were any gay unions, Philip. I mean, I know about the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and then there's sheet metal workers, and there's iron workers, and steel workers, and mine workers. I didn't know there were any gay unions.
Yeah, hell, I want to join. Where is it? I want to find it.
I think they give out a toaster with the membership card.
Oh, wow. Or maybe some of that moose stew. I hear that's pretty good.
Delicious with sweet taters.
But, yeah, the whole thing's insane. These busy bastards are insane, and I think America's getting tired of it. I'm sending you something real quick, too. This is McCain on November 28th, 2001. If you want to play it real quick, it doesn't have to do with masturbation, but it has to do with him tying the anthrax attacks at that time to Saddam Hussein. And if you listen to the language he's using at that point, it's the same as we're hearing now about Ahmadinejad. Potential weapons of mass destruction. Just another way to prove that, yeah, this guy's insane too. He's a liar. And I don't know. But, geez, I didn't know that. You know, and I've been off the ball, really. I've just been concentrating on ruining the sanctity of heterosexual marriages in my neighborhood. I didn't even think about taking down Wall Street.
You got to focus, Philip. You've got to focus.
I tell you, well, my day starts early in the morning, you know.
I know. I've seen, you know,
everything in all day.
I was quietly provided a copy of the Gay Agenda. And, you know, I wouldn't, no offense, but I won't take the toaster. That's too much work.
that kills me, dude.
Toppling financial regimes and then, you know, the earthquakes, the volcanoes, the hurricanes. That is just too much work.
You know what kills me about these son of a bitches, too, is most of these homophobes, yeah, especially if they're talking heads of politicos, eventually you find them in the woods or the...
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, hey, Rush Limbaugh, what were you doing flying off to the Dominican Republic, a known haven for little boy sex, with a bottle of Viagra? Care to answer? No, of course not.
Oh, Las Tamos, there, lift my oxycontin.
Yeah. My friends, the liberal media is attacking me for having Viagra in a doctor's name that wasn't me. Never mind that it's a felony. It's the liberal media. So what if I want to go to the Dominican Republic and have sex with little boys? Yeah, I know. Hey, Philip, I got to run along, brother. Okay. Good hearing from you. And everybody, go and check out the show there at prockwell.livejournal.com.
Yeah, that's right. P-R-A-C-Q-U-E-L.
Yeah, P-R-A-C-Q-U-E-L.
No Q in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
P-R-A-C-U-E-L.
Okay. See, I almost messed everything up. PRACUEL.livejournal.com, right?
Right. You don't want to give them the wrong URL. They might get to a porn site.
Oh, please, please. No more. I can't take it. Philip, take care and have a wonderful evening.
All right.
All right. Bye now. Bye. All right. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Just listening in. They're fixing to have that vote in just a few minutes.
Yeah, that's coming up right about 9 p.m. Eastern, isn't it?
They're saying in minutes. I don't know what. I really haven't heard a time set down. But if we're like everything else, it'll be late too. But I was listening to your program. This is pretty interesting this evening.
Well, and there's just so much. There's so much stuff out there on any given night. And I guess Barack Obama is going to vote for the Wall Street welfare.
Yep. I'm very disappointed. I don't know where Hillary stood. She was on there a while ago, but I was listening to the conversation you were having, and I didn't hear her state a position on what she was going to do.
Well, you know, I checked in and ran a little bit of the audio during the program, and it was Frank Lautenberg talking about trains. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Frank Lautenberg, and I believe we need rapid rail in this country, but it wasn't about the bailout, so I went away from it. So, you know, my bad on that.
Yeah, I haven't kept up. I know the stock market closed down a little bit.
Yeah, about 20 points or so. Nothing critical.
No.
Looks like the stock market's just doing stock market stuff, doesn't it, Ed?
Yeah, yesterday was
huge.
Yeah, it was a shocker to me yesterday. But it was also a shocker when it came back. I expected, in fact, I wouldn't even listen to the news until, I don't know, probably 1 o'clock, because I figured that it was going to be another disastrous day. But when I found out what it was, I was pleasantly shocked or surprised or ever how you want to state it. And
well, like I said earlier, I got on the phone and I called Rockefeller's office and I called Byrd's office, and you know, I don't do this, you know. I'd really appreciate it if he would listen to me and vote. No, I tell him now, I say, this is an election year, or at least for Rockefeller's office. I said, this is an election year, and voting for this bailout is a deal breaker. He doesn't have to know that I already don't plan to vote for him. But
I don't intend to vote for it, not a one of them.
I'm not voting for the Republican opponents, but I'm leaving it blank.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking for Jesse Johnson.
Oh, yeah?
Today, and even Mel got quiet.
Oh.
He said, I didn't know that they was running. So Mel might cross up.
Well, he's got no business. And nobody who supports workers' rights or things like prevailing wage or unemployment compensation or even a 40-hour work week, nobody who supports workers' rights has any business supporting a right-wing candidate for governor. But, you know, that's just me. Everybody's got to do their own thing in the booth.
No, that isn't just you. That's a matter of fact. And I remember when Tom Bale changed his politics when he lost running for Democratic sheriff over here in this county. Nobody ever voted for him again. He ran on a Republican ticket after he lost a Democrat. And that done a number on him right there. And if Mel's not careful, it could be a wear. He said, well, he said, that's all Manchin is. Said, you know, but Charlotte Pritt is for Jesse Johnson too.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, look what the Manchins did to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, politics, I don't care which side you are. The people that's running for those office are very vicious. And they don't, Republican and Democrat, there's very few of them that's clean and stays clean. And runs clean. People that run clean politics lose. I'm convinced of that.
Well, in this era, you're right.
So, I don't know. But I just thought I'd give, you know, give a listen in. And don't have a whole lot to say. I'm just waiting on that. And I was thinking tonight was Thursday. I was sitting here with all ready to watch.
Yeah, you're a day ahead. Yeah, you got a day ahead of yourself.
Well, guess I'm a little bit anxious on seeing how bad. I'm afraid that Biden will take it easy on her. And of course, you know how I feel about that. If they're a woman or whatever they are, and they're running for office, they're fair game.
Well,
I hope he does a real number on her.
I hope he does, too. Well, Ed, it's good hearing from you. I'll put you back on hold, and you can listen to the remainder of the program, okay?
Sure thing, and I appreciate you taking the call.
Oh, no trouble at all. Always a pleasure, Ed. Take care.
Okay.
our buddy Ed here in Fayette County. A little announcement for you. We've got a good number of listeners in the Chicago area, and if you've got time, and I urge you to find the time, coming up, you know, this is far enough out that you can mark it on your calendar and make plans for it. October 16th at Columbia College in the Chicago Film Row Center. That's on 1107 South Wabash on the 8th floor in Chicago. Free admission. Mountaintop removal film running that evening that focuses on the struggle of coal field residents from across Appalachia to end the practice of mountaintop removal, the nightmare that it is. There will be a collection by a group called Topless America. The film, that's the name of the film too, Topless America. The film crew and students will be collecting spare change to help build a new Marsh Fork Elementary School on behalf of Pennies of Promise. That's penniesofpromise.org. It's all part of Columbia College Chicago's Critical Encounters series. Again, free admission. And if you're in the Chicago area, anywhere nearby, attend the film. I think you'll find it well worthwhile. You know, that's one of those things I'd love to be there for it. Just to attend and engage the response, because this movement is gaining tremendous strength, tremendous power. Now let's wrap up the program. It's about 9 minutes before the hour. Just a couple of things that I wanted to make sure got out to you. Let's see, we told you, the follow up to the Dayton mosque story. Sickening. You know, how much difference is there between the mindset that sprays a 10-year-old girl in the face with pepper spray and the mindset that plants a bomb and blows up 10-year-old girls? It's Dayton is the new Birmingham, I guess. In fact, citizens in Dayton were just deluged with this hateful film about Muslim people. So it's no, you know, it's, that's called incitement. And it's no surprise that somebody, some typical right-wing, pig-licking, voting hate-monger decided to take out their anger and their hatred on a 10-year-old girl. Nice. Not. But there's no evidence of a hate crime. Get that? An unknown person sprayed a little girl in the face with pepper spray and sickened an entire room full of folks at a mosque. But, you know, the cops say, there's no evidence of hate crime here. Move along. Nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for. Interesting question just rolling in from Sophie. Be interesting to take your thoughts on it, but unfortunately the show's almost over. Do you suppose if the bailout passes tonight that the Senate will vote tomorrow night so the media will cover, or the House, I assume she means the House will vote tomorrow night so the media will cover the debate and then the Senate and go back and forth reducing the amount of coverage they give the debate? That's a very interesting question. Because this is all wrestling. I'm sure John McCain would love that. The less people that watch Mussolini tomorrow night, the better. God, it's I'll almost be afraid to tune in, but I will. But before we close the program for the evening, and thank you, by the way, everyone who joining in live or joining in via podcast or archive from whiterosesociety.org. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed it. I first saw it, our chat room moderator Lottie sent it along, and at that point in time, it was from Asia Times. The headline at Asia Times said, "Bush had no plan to catch bin Laden.
dated October 1st. Well, it's migrated as far as the UK. It was published there today in the Times, based on an expose in a French weekly called Le Canard Enchaîné. Le Canard Enchaîné. That looks like an accent grave or aigu. I can't remember. I think that means the bound duck or the chained duck. Enchanted duck. Ah, there we go. The enchanted duck. Le Canard Enchaîné. Enchaîné, yeah. That newspaper reported that there were direct quotations from a diplomatic cable written by François Fitou, the French deputy ambassador in Kabul, a communication with the British ambassador in Kabul, stating that the U.S. strategy in Afghanistan is wrong and the war there is as good as lost. Monsieur Fitou reported to the French President Sarkozy's office and his own foreign ministry that Sir Sherard Cowper-Coles, the British ambassador, had said, quote, American strategy is destined to fail in Afghanistan. And the paper published what it said was a reproduction of the coded cable that says, quote, the current situation is bad. The security situation is getting worse. So is corruption, and the government has lost all trust. Our public statements should not delude us over the fact that the insurrection, while incapable of winning a military victory, nevertheless has the capacity to make life increasingly difficult, including the capital. The presence, especially the military presence, of the coalition is part of the problem. Do you hear that? Part of the problem, not the solution. The foreign forces are ensuring the survival of a regime which would collapse without them. In doing so, they are slowing down and complicating an eventual exit from the crisis, which, moreover, will probably be dramatic. Okay, that is from the Times UK. With me so far? Now, we back up to the Asia Times story that I mentioned by Gareth Porter, Dateline Washington. New evidence from former United States officials reveal that Osama bin Laden and other al-Qaeda leaders were able to skip Afghanistan for Pakistan unimpeded in the first weeks after September 11, 2001, as the George W. Bush administration failed to plan to block their retreat. Failed to plan? They didn't want to block the retreat. They've never had any interest in capturing Osama bin Laden. Top administration officials instead, here, you know how this sentence plays out, say it with me, gave priority to planning for war with Iraq, leaving the United States with not nearly enough troops or strategic airlift capacity to close the large number of possible exit routes through the Afghanistan-Pakistan border area where bin Laden escaped in late 2001. He must be allowed to survive because there was oil to steal. You're darn right. But hey, Congress. Let's not get all twisted or anything and start talking about anything crazy like impeachment, okay? Let's don't do that. Wouldn't be a good thing. Wouldn't be wise. Wouldn't be prudent. Don't need to protect the Republic or nothing. Shucks, no. So that's where we close the program this evening. Again, thanks very much for joining in. Thank you very much to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Partial sponsors of all the programming on the Horn. Thank you to Peter Godbold, enjoying a much-deserved vacation. Hope you're hope everything is going well, the flight went well, and you're having a blast, Peter. He's our IT professional. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, musician in residence, and all around webmaster and all around tech guru. John's show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday evening here on the Horn. Thanks to everybody who contributes to keep the Horn on the air. It's a tough job, and you guys have done a marvelous job so far. We're smack dab on top of a brand new month, and it all starts all over again. So Your gifts, your contributions are what makes it possible to create this unimpeded dialogue, this renewal of discussion, this rebirth of the American debate that is the Horn. Thank you very, very much. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.